Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, let's get into it. This is going to be fun. I was just talking briefly with my friend Anthony Williams off here. Skype is still new to me, so I'll make sure I have all my connections right. I have all my my things working as they're supposed to work. We've got them on the account, and I guess I have to okay that, and then folks can call in. So I guess I better pick up my account every day so people can check in with us from around the world. So I'm not even going to wait time here. I'm just going to get him right on. Let me find my round of applause here. Wait a minute. Hang on. Here we go. So it's been way too long since we talked, and like I say, we just got started off the air. I thought, I better save this for the air. We're just going to ramble right through the start of the show, and who knows what's going to happen. But I want to welcome Anthony Williams back to the show, who's a veteran of several shows with me from WEBY. And then he moved to New Zealand. So we're going to pick up first of all, welcome to the show, sir. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Greg. How about yourself?
I am really inspired. I got a great story for the second hour of the show, so if you want to listen in, you'll probably be asleep. It's 1:00 in the morning, New Zealand time, so this is why I'm really happy to have Anthony on. But life is great.
We've
got a brand new. Go ahead. It's Thursday. Oh, that's right. 1:00 in the morning, Thursday. Yeah.
I'm calling from the future.
I never thought about it that way, but it's true. It's that dateline thing. So let's. Go ahead. What are you going to say?
No, I was just agreeing with you, that's all. Sorry, there's probably a bit of a delay because we're so far apart.
No, the thing is, it's me. I get over-enthusiastic and I talk too fast. So that hasn't changed. I'm still working on it, but I tell you, ADHD drives this show. We got Gene, our producer, who's here. So, Gene, feel free to jump in here at any time, and you might have some questions from our U.S. transplant to New Zealand. So let me just give people a little background. We used to talk business a lot. Anthony had a business in town here in Milton. And we had it was just fabulous because he's got a background business. I think you've got either an MBA or whatever your degree. You know business, all right? So you've been studying this for a long time. Is it MBA?
MBA, yep.
Okay, where'd you get that from? One of those prestigious schools so I can go?
University of Phoenix.
Okay, well, there you go. Where's it going to go? Anyway, did that help you? Did you notice a big difference in your ability to do business from an MBA? Is it worth it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The ability to just plan and think ahead and actually put things on paper, it's a huge advantage because then you can go forward to a bank and say, hey, look, I have a plan. We've got everything spelled out. All the financials and pro formas are prepared for the next 5 years. And this is what the business should look like. Here's our advertising plan. Here's where it's going to go. And if you need to get financed for anything you want to do, banks are much happier to look at it from that standpoint than they are if you just go in and go, I have an idea.
Yeah, see, that's my thing. I just had an idea. The beauty of Action Radio is that there are no really startup costs other than a subscription to Blog Talk and a few other subscriptions for various sound programs and Adobe Audition so I can make the commercials, promos, and everything else I do here. But the cost of Blog Talk is really small, which is what I wanted. I didn't want a big loan capital investment. I didn't need property. I didn't need facilities. I didn't need machinery. I didn't need employees. I'm going to need employees, but there's a lot of things I didn't need, so I didn't have to go that route. University of Phoenix. Was it an online thing you did there, or did they have classes, or both, or how did you do that?
Yeah, so I did all of my University of Phoenix study online.
Interesting. Yeah, see, I've always wondered how I do because I did so much class participation in school. I don't know if I had taken an online course, it would have worked out. But it definitely worked out for you because you're a successful guy, which is great. So just to get
there's online participation too. So they had requirements that you had to log in and post and engage with your fellow classmates a minimum of 10 times a week.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good thing. Maybe
if you didn't do that, you automatically were dropped from the class.
Wow, that is interesting. Yeah, I got to learn more about this because, whenever I think MBA, of course, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, all these big schools come to mind. But you don't need one of those schools to get a decent MBA and do some good things with it. That's what it sounds like.
Well, what's really interesting is Harvard School of Business asked mm-hmm. University of Phoenix to write their online MBA program because they were so successful with it.
That is interesting. Okay, well, if you have some alumni there or yeah. folks that you know back at University of Phoenix, maybe that's something that we can, you know, get them on the show and talk about. What do you think? Yeah, go ahead. You're going to say something.
Just agreeing okay. with you again.
Okay. Yeah. If people wonder what's happening, Alex, I get really enthusiastic, especially when I get a friend of mine on the show I haven't talked to for a while. So I'm even talking faster and leaping subjects faster than I normally do, which is breakneck speed anyway. I'm working on that. It's probably the one thing I'm really trying to do, you know, the most of here as the show goes on. But this is kind of cool. So I'm really excited today. So this is going to be a great thing. I have so many things to talk about. Anthony, hopefully, will be on this on a regular basis. We can check in and see what's going on, you know, from here to New Zealand. And also there are other folks I want to get from around the world on the show also. Well, let's go to why you moved. What was the dream? What was the goal? And we'll find out how it worked out. So here you are in the United States. You've been here most of your life or all of your life. And then you get this idea to move to New Zealand. I want to hear that whole story. That's fascinating.
Well, so the idea actually came a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I was living in Minnesota and absolutely hating the brutal winters in Minnesota. Yeah. And as a teenager, I thought, you know, I want to move somewhere. When I'm 18 years old, I want to move anywhere in the world that doesn't have snow.
Okay.
And that was the driving force. And I started researching all these different places and places in the U.S. at first. And then it occurred to me that I don't have to be limited to the United States. There's mm-hmm. a whole big world out there to explore and look at. And the interesting thing was I started looking at – I don't speak any other languages other than English, so mm-hmm. not fluently anyway. And so I looked at
but
English
you could have
countries.
If you wanted to move to France, for example – if you want to move to like France or Spain or Argentina or someplace, you know, or I don't know, Thailand, I mean, someplace with a different language, well, that'd be hard. The Asian languages are harder. But if you want to go, say, France, for example, it wouldn't take you that long if you really wanted to live there, because I know a friend of mine that did that. He took off and he just got sick of the United States. He wanted somebody there. He was like MIT graduate, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, really smart guy, moved to France. Ended up working in a bookstore. Loved it. Had a great time. Spoke French. Learned French in about 6 months. Completely fluent. So
yeah,
language
I mean,
wouldn't necessarily have been
a barrier.
It
can be learned, but I wanted to make sure that I had a good, solid base. And that was kind of the dream and plan. So I looked at all these different places, and I put three places to live on my bucket list. And that was Arizona, Hawaii, and New Zealand. And I've lived in all three, my friend.
Aha. Well, let's take them in order. Which one was first, Arizona or Hawaii?
Arizona first.
Okay.
Yep.
So how'd you get there?
I lived in Arizona for moved there on my 18th birthday.
Wow. You remind me of me.
Packed up everything I owned and gone.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Did you do, I guess, undergrad later, or did you go right to the MBA then? Or do you have an undergrad degree before you get the MBA?
I actually started at the University of Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And I was going there for an astronomy major, which I later then changed to mathematics when uh-huh. I realized that I was colorblind and astronomy and me weren't going to work out.
Well, that's interesting. What's your colorblind? Yeah. I don't think it would be. See, this is. I'm learning things we've never talked about because we stuck pretty much to the business angle. And that filled up our hour really easily. So colorblind, because that would have disqualified you from flying, which is what I wanted to do. Of course, I had the eyesight, degraded 18. I couldn't go fly jets. You know, I started wearing glasses. And so I understand, you know, how this can limit all kinds of different things. Which color is it, like red, green, or what's your, if you don't mind?
A lot of them just red, green. So I'm good for commercial driving, but pretty much any like electrical engineering or anything like that is pretty well ruled out for me as a career path.
Interesting. So when you see a rainbow, are there gaps in it, or does it kind of blur together? Or I mean, I'm just curious. I don't know where that came to mind from, but
Good question. Good question. So the colorblindness is really more about difficulty distinguishing between certain shades of certain colors.
Okay.
So the one that really sticks out in people's minds is red and green because they're absolute opposites on the spectrum, and people can't tell them apart, right? And that's actually the most common type of colorblind.
Yeah, traffic lights.
But those people have no problem distinguishing blue from purple or green from brown, which is what I struggle with.
Okay. I can understand blue from purple because they're very close on the spectrum. You got blue to, you know, was it red, green, you know, red, yellow, orange? No, was it orange, red, orange,
dude,
yellow,
no
green,
idea. I've been
blue.
A Vikings fan my whole life, and I always thought their jerseys were blue.
That's funny. I was just trying to go through the rainbow colors. Isn't it red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet? And no one knows what indigo is, but it's out there.
Yeah.
So blue and violet.
Between blue and violet.
Yeah, so blue and purple are close enough. And when did you find out the Vikings wore purple?
I was watching a game, and they were like, "Hail to the purple and gold." And I went, "The who?"
Exactly. What were your school colors? Now that we're on this subject.
My school colors were actually maroon and gray.
Okay, you could see those?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
not
good.
A problem.
At least you pick a school. Okay, so you never know where our conversations are going to go. This is what makes it so much fun. Right, so Arizona, what was the motivation to head out there?
So the motivation there was I did want to go to school at the University of Arizona. So I had in mind back in those days to go to school for astronomy, and so that's where Hawaii, Arizona came, because those are the two biggest schools in the world for astronomy.
Now that's interesting.
And
is it
the University of Arizona?
Is it the clear sky? I mean, I think Arizona, is the university far enough away they have a decent observatory, or it's just a really good school?
Well, they have the best optics lab in the world. So like all the mirrors for the James Webb telescope that was just launched, those were all made at University of Arizona. And they made the two largest mirrors, ground-based mirrors, in the world at Kitt Peak Observatory, which is in southern Arizona, and also the one in Mauna Kea in Hawaii. So the mirrors were made there at University of Arizona.
Mm-hmm. For folks that don't know, just basic, there's two basic kinds of telescopes. I was sort of like an amateur astronomer as a kid because I loved it. It was fun. I did a lot of it in Australia. So I had learned the southern constellations, which are different than the northern ones. And so I knew where the Southern Cross was, and you know, a bunch of other stuff. And is the Big Dipper on both sides of the equator? I'm not sure, or is it only northern hemisphere?
No. So the Big Dipper is a northern constellation, but your zodiac constellations like Orion and Taurus and Cancer and all of those are seen.
Those are both sides of the equator. Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I mean, how would you have that'd be interesting about zodiacs? If you had a different zodiac in the southern hemisphere, that would be interesting. I never thought about that. Something else that folks don't think about, when you see the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn, the sun is over the Tropic of Cancer, you know, in the summertime in the northern hemisphere. The sun is over the Tropic of Capricorn, you know, in January, or, you know, or I think, or when's Capricorn? December, whatever it is, it's probably the longest day of the year. December 21st is your longest day down there. And so the Capricorn Cancer, so our navigation is based on zodiac signs, which I don't think a lot of people know, which is interesting. Oop, you still there? Where'd you go? Anthony? Come in, Anthony.
I think we lost him, unfortunately.
Oh, no. Well, he can call back. We got a Skype line, so let's see. I'll leave his line live, and we'll see what happens. Anthony, call back. Let me send him fortunately, see, this is the beauty. I love the communication these days. We've got let me see if I can try and reach him on the Skype line. If he comes back while I'm doing this, you know, make one. And let me just send him a quick message. Call back.
Just want to say good morning to everybody. Good morning, Greg.
Well, good morning. Yeah, it was just getting interesting, so I sent a message. Hopefully, you know, this is the beauty of Facebook, is that, he's definitely dropped off. Well, we'll get him back. It's like, dude, come on back. Well, at least I know what the number is, so I've got that, so I'll just put him right back on. But it's interesting, you know, the Skype numbers, I thought they were going to be, we have a Skype number code, and it wasn't that, so it kind of fooled me a bit, but I checked in earlier, you know, and talked to him before the show, and I was like, who's this? I was like, oh, it's Anthony. Oh, okay, so that's our Skype line for today. So it changes. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I would say, it does, which is weird.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, because you do the, you know, you get the calls, you know, before I do, except in this case, I just happened to grab it. But, So, well, until Anthony gets back, let's do a little news chat here. And because I have plenty of stuff to do, but hopefully, you know, something didn't happen. You know, the FBI didn't go, huh, Action Radio. You know, enough of that. I just heard a big ping in my headset. Are you still there?
I'm still here, yes.
Okay, good. Very good. Yeah. Something's going on this morning. it's kind of crazy. All right, let me check while I'm going to move a couple things around. Oh, there he goes. He's back. All right. So that's the good news.
I could hear you guys the whole time.
Well, that's hysterical. Well, I sent you a message on Facebook.
I can hear you talking about me in the third person like I wasn't there. And I'm like, I'm here.
That's funny. Well, so welcome to – this is the FBI KGB way of letting us know that we're being monitored. So, yeah. So they wait till they find out how powerful Action Radio is going to be when we start, you know, making major legislative moves here in the United States and millions of people get behind it. Then you see real stuff happening to my radio show. Anyway, so astronomy I find fascinating.
Yeah, and that's always been your passion, right, Greg?
Which one? Radio?
The citizen legislature, getting things moving and helping create a more free society.
Well, it's interesting. I've had a few passions in life. My big one was flying at first, and I want to get back into it. So when this generates a little bit of income, I have a jet that I want to get. So flying has been a passion. I soloed at 16. You know, I wanted to be an airline pilot, and through a series of absolutely horrendous events many times, you know, that career never quite worked out. Second great passion was music. You know, I started playing music when I was 6 years old. You know, I went from piano, which I absolutely hated, to trumpet, which I absolutely loved and couldn't play, and ended up on tuba. Now I play guitar in a rock band. So I've been playing music all my life. And radio was like, you know, it was the plan B career after the airline pilot career. So that airline pilot career didn't work out. So I tried for years and years to get into radio. And I finally got a job at WEBY. You know, here in Milton, Florida. And it was really funny because I used to call the boss and I pretended that I was a local caller. I was really calling from San Francisco. And it was hysterical. It was right after open heart surgery too. So here I am, you know, grabbing my chest and struggling, trying to sound normal. And so I'd call into to the Tuesday afternoon show on WBY. And hey, here's Greg again. It's like, hey, how you doing, Mike? You know, we chat for a while. And then I'd like die because I just had heart surgery, you know, and I'd get over it and I'd be like in pain for the next 5 hours. But it was worth it. I got the job. So, you know, I drove out here 4 months after surgery and here I am. Still here, still going.
Yes, and then you needed furniture and that's how we met.
Exactly. I need furniture. Yeah, there we go. So this was the connection. And so it's been a fascinating journey this whole time. I've always been... You know, I've always had that sort of, you know, Libra, you know, justice, fair play. I've always been a crusader for something. I can't stand the underdog, the downtrodden, the disadvantaged, the whatever. But it's always been in terms of freedom, not like a Democrat who wants to throw money at a situation. I've always been, you know, trying to work with the law and create a situation of like what you do, opportunity. An opportunity in the law, freedom, you know, in terms of everything from judicial jury instructions so that people know about nullification to, you know, tax reform to environmental stuff to, you know, just a whole bunch of different areas that we're involved with. And over time, I looked at all the different, you know, pieces of the puzzle of what I've been doing. And I mean, I did legislative stuff in college, you know, I was various activists. I was in, you know, briefly in federal law enforcement after 9/11. You know, I was a pilot, I was a flight instructor, I taught. And you put all these skills together and this plan formed in my head, much like plans form in your head. I think that's why we can talk a lot. We have a lot of things in common. So I formed this plan that I wanted to combine a citizen legislature with a radio show and actually write bills on the air and take the opinions of the, you know, the genius of just regular people, you know, and see what we could come up with. So I had no idea where it was going to go or what going to happen with it, and I still don't. That's the fun of it. This is a great unknown. But I knew it would work, and I knew it would be popular enough, and I knew I could sustain it if I could get some backing and some folks that would come join us, and people like Gene and you who've been on the show. And I've got, I think, either 12 or 13 different reporters now, ranging in age from 17 to much older. We've got all kinds of different subjects. We have a bunch of bills that we've written at the local, state, and the federal level. And we've got a brand new website. And we have an incredible webmaster, Eric Colley, who just created this brand new writeyourlaws.com site that is wonderful. Now, have you had a chance to take a look at it? Because you're a business guy. It'd be interesting to get your opinion. On you, writeyourlaws.com?
Oh, yeah. Of course, you know, I've been involved with that with you in the past. So
right.
We've looked at a few things and I've put my opinion forward on a few things. The one that really caught my attention recently was this idea that's going around of having people who are essentially drunk drivers that kill somebody's parents then have to pay child support to that child. I saw that and I thought, that's actually a really brilliant idea. But the only way that works is if you don't put that person in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, prison.
If you put them in prison, well, then their productivity goes way down, and then it's just a double dip to the taxpayers, right? Because any money that's paid to them while they're working in prison is paid by the government.
Right, which is us.
Where do they get that money? From the taxpayers.
Yeah, that is an interesting bill. I haven't really taken the time to study it like I should. Fortunately, we get the email of everybody who posts the bill, and I know the person, I want to get a hold of them, get them on the show, and we're going to talk about that case. And it's interesting you point that out. This sort of brings it to my attention that I should be looking at that more closely. I'll make a little note to myself right now. But and this is what is the eternal fascination is that, like I say, just us regular folks have really good ideas, and that's part of the joy of doing this, is that I believed it was going to happen, and now it is happening, and people are coming forward and saying, "Well, I got an idea," and some of them are really dumb, and but a few of them are just absolute gems. It's a really good idea, and a lot of it comes from personal experience, and people run up against the law, like family court. We have one person, Michael Volpe, who's a he's an investigative reporter, was working on a bill to equate family court and bring them under the RICO statutes for racketeering, for fixing their cases ahead of time and doing all kinds of other horrendous things. And so this would kind of be, in that sort of line is, what do we do with drunk drivers? How do we get the proper, justice for the victims? Because victims aren't really thought of. They prosecute the perps, but they don't, the victims kind of get left behind. So this is a great thing to look at in terms of how that's going to work. But for me, just being able to have these people just put these brilliant ideas on things that the legislature can't do, especially like we have one on product liability.
Are desperately needed, Greg.
What's that?
There are some reforms that are desperately needed in the United States. And living here in New Zealand now, I see some of those reforms already have occurred here. And it's you don't need to keep people in prison forever.
Yeah.
You need to rehabilitate them, get them back out. Get their once they've served their time, let them get back out into the workforce. There's this unfortunate stigma and dogma that goes along with somebody who commits a crime and goes to prison. Now they've got a criminal record. Now they can't get a job. So what are they forced to do? Lie, cheat, and steal, and that winds them back in prison again. So there just has to be some way that you can fix that, and that's where that idea of the paying restitution, paying child support to a child whose parents were killed in a drunk driving accident. Keep that person out of prison, let them stay in the workforce, and then have them pay that child support. They've learned their lesson. They're going to be haunted by those, the victims' memories every single night when they go to sleep. They don't need to go to prison for 20 years to, to think about that anymore.
Yeah, especially if it gets them to rehab and gets them, gets them back where they can be productive. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that I have never been a big advocate of the imprisoned society. I've never been a strong proponent of capital punishment. And, of course, all the conservatives go crazy when I say that. I said, do you know how many people have been executed who are innocent? Even if, one is too many. And, I've always believed that, especially now with DNA coming out as proving so many people, that they've had on death row, they did not do the crime that they're being accused of. And a lot of people have been killed, they've been executed for things that they didn't do. And so in that respect, as much as, you can't give somebody's years back, at least they get whatever rest of their life back, And so I've always been a believer in that.
Republicans were truly the pro-life party. They had to stop backing, capital punishment, because how can you say on one hand that we want to protect life and on the other hand that we want to take it?
Well, kind of, if you want to look at it from a constitutional point of view, you can, because as long as people get their due process, you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property except through due process. And that's what separates a republic from a democracy, where they can just vote your stuff away. So that's a good difference. But the thing is, are you actually getting your due process? The system is supposed to work, but it doesn't always work. So due process would also include changing the verdict and getting your due process to say, oh, we were wrong. So now you can come back out again. And you can't do that with capital punishment. You can't do that if somebody's dead. And people are like, well, what if you just know? Well, in some cases you do know. We've got some school, assassins, and we've got Daryl Brooks, who ran over those people up in Wisconsin. So, they know who did it. So it's an interesting line. Well, if you absolutely know, why not do capital punishment for them? You know what? Then you get into equal protection things. Well, why are you killing this person, not the other one? Because you think you know they did it. Well, you do know they did it. You know, so it still gets to be a mess. So there's always this gray area, you know, any way you look at it. But I still rather not have the idea of capital punishment. And that's, you know, like I say, if you're willing to protect life, then you're protecting life. You know, life is sacred. So
yeah.
Lock them up for the rest
and,
of
you know,
their life.
No,
I wouldn't say and you
there's
know,
no life
you
in
do...
prison sentences here in New Zealand.
Huh.
Well, pretty much your longest prison, unless you're a massive repeat offender, is 5 years.
Interesting.
What is the crime rate like there?
Close to zero. About as close to zero as it can be in any civilized country.
Wow, that's
well, let's
awesome.
Talk about the differences in the two countries that you found. And like crime would be like the first one to analyze. You know, you take a place like Chicago. You know, I think they're going to have they're probably going to end up with like 1,000 murders this year, which is insane,
yeah.
Ridiculous number. And it's mostly young black men killing other young black men in gangs in drug infested neighborhoods. And they could cure that with a bunch of different things. And I don't mean getting rid of the Second Amendment, you know, but because that's for the honest people. It's not for the criminals. But let's just compare, no, you know, things that you found. Go ahead.
May I just throw my opinion out there real quick just
oh, please.
So that people can hear it?
That's why you're here.
Okay, so my opinion on that is mm-hmm. a lot of stuff could be legalized, and all of a sudden the gangs lose all their power.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The war on drugs has been an absolute abject failure.
Oh, agreed. Well, and the worst part about the
you know,
war on drugs, not only
look
has it failed, it's also...
On, say, hey, yeah. Let's legalize things,
right.
And we'll well-regulate it, tax it. They don't have the gang issue anymore.
Well, I think Prohibition proved that. You know, when they tried to make alcohol
yeah.
illegal, you know, and you got the Chicago gangs, you know, and Al Capone and, you know, Pretty Boy Floyd and some of the other names. Everybody knows Al Capone, you know, and that was a result of prohibition, of the government prohibiting something that people wanted.
Yep.
You know, and so the whole idea of control. Now the big thing is medical marijuana. In fact, we have a person talking about, I think it's CBD. I always get these things confused. But anyway, so we have a wine, weed and wellness section on the show. So we're looking into that. You know, and what's the difference between, you know, if it's medical marijuana versus recreational? I don't really care. Now, does that mean you don't drive your car after getting ridiculously high? No, because your rights end where other people's rights begin.
I have an opinion on that as well.
Yeah, go ahead.
I will always vote no to medical marijuana. And the reason
okay,
for it is because there's a percentage of health care that is mm-hmm. paid for by the government. And the government should not be paying for marijuana. The government should be collecting taxes on marijuana. So
okay.
no, I would always say no to medical marijuana, but 100% yes to regulated and taxed legalized marijuana.
But if people want to use marijuana for medical purposes or if doctors want to prescribe it, would that be a problem?
Then once it's legal, they can do that.
Okay. Actually, that makes
yeah,
a lot of sense.
But to just say, oh, we're gonna not make it totally legal. We're only going to say, yep, it's okay for medical use.
Mm-hmm.
That creates an extra bureaucracy layer and just adds more more revenue that the government needs to create.
Now, that makes a lot of sense. I've never understood the making marijuana illegal, especially when you have cigarettes and alcohol and you know various other drugs and things that are available out there that are a whole lot more dangerous. I mean, I think you know how many people does Tylenol kill every year? You know, just
do the math and
yeah.
follow the money, right? You were talking about the gangs in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
The drug trade, the marijuana trade in Chicago alone is a $4 trillion industry.
Oh my God, where'd you get that figure from? Where do I want to look
that's
that up?
Your GDP.
That's what now?
That's your GDP. We're close to it.
That's our entire GDP, $4 trillion. So you're saying the marijuana – so wait a minute. Let me understand this. So how does that figure in then?
That's how many – that's how much marijuana is sold in just Chicago alone.
$4 trillion worth?
By the gangs. It's all tax-free. So where do you think they get their guns from?
Well, they just buy them on the street.
You got that much money.
They buy stolen ones. Yeah, they pay for – they have thieves go out and steal guns. Well, you got people leaving guns in their cars and, you know, unguarded in their homes. You got people doing all kinds of dumb things. But, I mean, I'm sure they rip off gun stores and everything else. you know, there's an entire market of guns. I'm sure they're stolen from any number of places, from National Guard armories to, you know, to wherever wherever your guns are stolen. I don't know. I'm not a criminal. I don't know where they, you know, all the ways that people, you know, steal guns. But yeah, apparently they're not that hard to get. So that's, well, again, the number one is way not for the criminals, folks. Yeah, go ahead, Anthony.
The number one way that they're gotten is they're taken right out of people's unlocked cars.
Okay. I knew that was a problem. I didn't know it was the number one problem. That's interesting.
Yep. Yep. Speak with any member of law enforcement. They'll tell you the same thing. Just that's where it comes from.
You know, it's interesting that because we had a problem with that here. It was either Milton or Pensacola. I think it might have been I think it was Milton, where people were just randomly walking down the street trying to open everybody's door. And if they have found a gun in it, there it goes. You know, and so a lot of people reporting stolen guns. Well, how did I get stolen? Well, I was in my car. Well, why? What happened? Well, was your car locked? No. Yeah, that's irresponsible gun ownership. And so that's. But it's interesting.
Now, if New Zealand, that would get banned from owning firearms for the rest of your life.
Say that again. You want to? If you leave an unlocked car
in New Zealand, doing something that stupid with your firearms would get you banned from owning firearms for the rest of your life.
Okay, I thought you said you wanted that here. That's interesting. Okay.
No,
so,
but that would be good to have it here. No, that would be good to have it here because you talk about being responsible. If you are a gun owner, why would you leave it your car unlocked? That don't make any sense.
Well, why would you leave a gun in your car anyway?
Well, that too. You know, it's, wow.
Yeah, see my, you know, I understand that. In fact, there are now, like, you know, car gun holsters where you can actually put your gun in a holster while you're driving. But the thing is, as a gun owner, and I got a carry permit. It's one of the first things I did in Florida. You know, I carry a gun all the time in Florida, but I don't leave it in my car. You know, the whole purpose of carrying a gun is that I'm carrying it. I'm responsible for it from the minute it leaves the gun safe to the minute it goes back into the gun safe. You know, and so
And you're responsible for it when it's in the gun safe too.
Well, of course, yeah. But what I'm saying is, it's a different level. But it's outside, you know, my home. It's with me. It would never be in the car locked unless I had I don't have to think about that. You know, I might even have a gun safe in the car. I haven't quite figured that out. But I've always, at least so far, unless I can find a reason, you know, because I don't trust car locks. It's just not that good. It's too easy to break into a car. I would never want to have a gun out of my control. And so to me, it would never make sense to leave it in a car if I can't bring it wherever I'm going. You know, I'm not gonna take it with me. I'll, you know, be unarmed for whatever that is, and that happens at times, a lot of times. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on what's going on. But
that's another fundamental difference in America and New Zealand. By the way, is in America, of course, the right to bear arms. In New Zealand, it's a privilege. So, if you want to have a firearm, you have to go through firearm safety course, and you have to be fully vetted by the police department. And funny thing, I never owned a gun when I was in the U.S., but I have two of them now.
That is fascinating. Do you know why?
I was always able to have one if I wanted to, so there was never a fear. I was just like, yeah, if I wanted to get a gun, I could just go get one.
Right.
But then I get here, and it's like, well, you don't have that right. And I went, okay, well, then I'll do the steps necessary to make sure that I can own a gun if I want to.
Yeah. Can you carry it?
No. So hunting rifles only. There's no pistols, no assault weapons, no fully automatic.
You mean
no
freedom
semi-automatics.
Rifle. I must correct you. That's freedom rifle, not assault weapon. We must use correct terminology on my show. I'm this tongue-in-cheek. I like to redefine words.
I fully believe in the American right to bear arms, and I believe that it was written exactly the way that the Founding Fathers intended it to be. That the right to gun ownership, the right to arms ownership, because it's not the right to own a gun, it's the right to bear arms.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever arms that the military should be able to have, a person should be able to have, according to the Founding Fathers, because if the government gets too tyrannical, the people's duty is to rise up and overthrow said government.
You know, we had a government coup here. We have an illegal occupying government. We have an illegal administration, and the people didn't rise up. And the auditors, you know, they found fraud in states all over this country, and they didn't disqualify the brand and electors, you know, so the people didn't rise up. So we have a Second Amendment. Yeah, we're not in national gulag here. I mean, they're not sending troops down the street. You know, we don't have an FBI, KGB, you know. Well, actually, we do in certain respect. You know, the D.C. jail is full of people that simply walked into the Capitol building January 6th. So will the people rise up?
Yep.
You know, they can, but will they? That's an interesting question. And I don't believe in the whole, you know, I don't want to see an armed revolution in this country. That's why I created Action Radio, to give people a way to influence and actually, you know, make it very public, the bills, the laws that we consent to be governed by, and get those laws passed. You know, so this is an actual, this is a way, you know, this is the difference. You know, people have bullets and ballots. That's the definition of liberty. It's either bullets or ballots, you know, or ballots or bullets. You know, we start with the ballots. That doesn't work. We go to bullets. Now, you got to have a whole bunch of intermediary steps and bills. Citizen legislation is why I'm doing this.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And it's very important, because if you don't, all of that power that was given to the federal government, I mean, not given to the federal government, was given to the people and the states, according to the Constitution. There's a very few things that are allowed to the federal government, so few things. And they've overstepped it for so long in the name of security or in the name of infrastructure or whatever, but they don't have that authority.
Yeah. Yeah. That's part of my, my overall goal, is to put the government back in the constitutional box. And a lot of it's through ignorance. We just had a big decision, the court, go ahead. What were you going to say?
You should try to get Rand Paul on your show. He's
I've tried to get a lot of people on the show. I think we just need that first million listeners, and then people will start applying like crazy to get on the show. You know, we're going to get there. I'll be at CPAC, you know, but there's a lot of opposition. I'll tell you something. I was going to talk about this in the second hour. Even the Republican Party, which I call the gelding old party, you know, I've been calling them that for a while. The geldings proved themselves geldings unbelievably last night. I was at a Republican meeting trying to speak before it. First of all, there are members of our local Santa Rosa, you know, community here that are Republicans that really have objections to what I'm doing, either because I make them look bad, or they just don't want the idea of new ideas. I think that's really part of it. Or all they want to do is register voters and collect money. And I'm sorry, that's just not good enough anymore. You know, the party's obsolete. I think party politics is obsolete. But I was actually, you know, like I said, I'll talk about this more in the second hour with David Jones, who's one of our local folks here I work with. I was actually interrupted in the middle of a talk I was giving to this group and told to leave the stage. And this guy says, "Are you a registered Republican?" I said, "No, I'm not." He says, "Well, you're done then. Go home. Sit down." I'm like, what the hell? What is this? What is this gulag mentality? I can get this treatment on Facebook. I don't need to hear from Republicans. But I'll tell you more about it. The party politics is something very strange that's going on. And it's not, you know, the Republicans are not the answer, folks. You know, I don't think any party is. And they've convinced me by what happened to me last night to stay independent. That is the only way to get going. In fact, I'm going to work hard to abolish both parties and make politicians independent, so they can actually come to independent decisions and not be at the whim party politics. But let's get back to New Zealand.
All the money is balanced around the two parties, right? So you've got your huge super PACs that just donate millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to the campaign that they want to win. There isn't a PAC like that for independents.
Not yet. Well, let's, you know, I'd like to get a chance to talk to Trump and see if he would be interested in some other folks in funding something like that, or just funding Action Radio and having us be able to get the word out for what we do. I think once this catches on nationally, it'll be a self-perpetuating thing. But New Zealand, you've got, you know, where gun ownership is a privilege, the prime minister, I forgot what her name is, but what to me just appeared one of the most authoritarian dictators in the world. You know, with your vaccine mandates and restrictions and lockdowns and mask mandates and everything else like that, you know, is that what you expected?
Lockdown.
Say it again.
Because I live in the Auckland, so we had one of the longest lockdowns in the world at 14 weeks. And we just finished that and come out of it into both a mask mandate and a vaccine mandate.
And
so,
you got cut off where you're living. So where is this? Where are you now? Which part of New Zealand?
So I live in Auckland.
Okay. So that's the capital. That's up north. All right. Okay.
No, not the capital. The capital is Wellington.
Oh, it is. Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Yep. Auckland,
so where's Wellington?
Wellington?
Okay.
Wellington is in the south part of the North Island, and Auckland is in the north part of the North Island.
Okay. All right.
So we were shut down. Just Auckland was shut down for 14 weeks. We weren't able to go anywhere, do anything, go to work. We could go to the grocery store. We could go to the pharmacy. We could go to the doctor, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
And the fine for violating the lockdown was $10,000.
Oh, jeez.
So people abided by it.
Yeah. Right?
And that's the way we did our lockdowns all from the beginning, and which is why we enjoyed some of the best freedoms in the world while other countries were still struggling with, are we locked down? Are we not locked down? What are we doing? We don't even have a clue. We're going on with our life until Delta hit. When Delta hit, they used that as an excuse to just ram us into another lockdown and force down all these mandates down everybody's mm-hmm. throat. And now we have to present our vaccine passport anywhere we go. We have to queue up to get scanned in if we want to go grocery shopping or go to the restaurant or go to the movies, whatever. And if you don't have your vaccine passport, I'm sorry, you don't count as part of society. You must go home.
See, that is every bit as much as, to me, this is every bit as much as the Jews in Nazi Germany. You've got a two-class society. You've got the vaccinated, the good people, and you've got what I call the DNA normal or the vaccine uninjured. You know, I've got vaccine injured and DNA normal. And you're segregating an entire class of people for what to me is no reason, because the vaccine itself is horribly dangerous. You know, you got some serious problems with that. And here's the worst part about it, though, is that COVID has a mortality rate of far less than 1%. And with people under 18, it's statistically zero. And yet this, what they're calling a vaccine, which is an RNA GMO shot, a modified organism under an emergency use authorization, long after the emergency has passed, you know, for a very low risk disease that people die from it, not with it, but from it, is about half the normal deaths from a flu virus every year, you know, and yet the world is panicking over this. This is a marketing campaign. We've been talking about this for almost 2 years now. This is a marketing campaign. Go ahead.
The initial reaction and the initial statistics came out of China, threw everybody into such a panic. Now,
right.
Greg, if we had an actual true COVID death rate of 4%,
mm-hmm.
you and I may not be here to even have this discussion, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's what was initially being reported out of China, and the whole world went, holy crap, we need to lock everything down. We need to stop what we're doing because 4% of the world's population dies from this. That's a huge, huge number, and we cannot risk – our healthcare systems can't handle it.
Yeah.
And China's
healthcare
system couldn't handle it.
Let me just jump in for a second, because that figure came from Neil Ferguson in Oxford, who is notoriously bad at predictions. He made previous predictions on climate change that were wrong. He has all these computer models that are wrong. You know, he forecast 2 million deaths in the United States and 200,000 plus in the UK, none of which happened. You know, it's just and in fact, if you actually take the death count from COVID, not with it, but from it in the United States, you're looking at about 5% of the 800,000. And I'm not really good at math, but that would be, let me see, 5% would be about 40,000 people who actually died of COVID. And the death rate from flu every year is about 80,000. So you're talking about something that's half as serious as flu.
Reported,
what's that?
You know, the CDC revised their own report, and they said that if you take out all of the contributing factor deaths and just take the COVID alone deaths, only 69,000
right.
people in the U.S. died of COVID.
Okay, 69. That's still not. I've heard 4%, 5%. I've heard 6%. So even if we go conservative,
yeah, so that was
6%.
This is an old number. Bear that in mind. That was the number that I heard, and it was when right after Joe Biden said the 600,000 dead in America. Which was not a thing, right?
Yeah.
Got hit
by
a bus, but also tested positive for COVID.
It's COVID death. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, here's the thing, too. You don't know about this. Because unfortunately, we haven't talked for way too long. But I broadcast March 2nd of 2020, a show where I discovered the Diderot study out of Marseille, France, that chloroquine kills COVID. I knew and told everybody way back then. This is 2 weeks before Laura Ingraham broke the news on Fox. And a few other folks did. Of course, they were immediately censored and told not to do it again. But we've been broadcasting consistently since March 2nd of 2020. This is only like a month or so after this thing was discovered, or at least publicly announced, that there is no pandemic. We've got a cure. We had chloroquine, which then we got the better form, hydroxychloroquine. Then 6 months later, I heard about ivermectin. I had the Dr. Zelenko Action Radio Coronavirus Clearinghouse. I became friends with Dr. Zelenko, who's now world famous, you know, for his protocol that's curing and treating and preventing and helping the vaccine injured all over the world. We knew. You know, I did a show on how, you know, all the things that ways to affect a virus other than vaccines. In fact, I even wrote a bill back in February of 2020 that said that Congress has to only spend half its money on vaccines and half on killing the damn virus. You know, viruses kill viruses. Viruses and drugs kill viruses. Drugs themselves kill viruses. You know, hydroxychloroquine destroys the protein layer and zinc destroys the genetic material of a virus. That's why they work. We knew this. I've never varied from that one bit. So all these lockdowns and masks and all this other crap that's going on, it's all a marketing ploy. It's all the market. And the CDC is the worst place to get information because they own patents. They're in the vaccine business. They get royalties. They get license fees. They get, you know, and then the NIH is just as bad. The three of them, the NIH, the FDA, and the CDC, what I call the government health, you know, industrial pharmaceutical complex. They're all in this. They all make money. In fact, the NIH and Moderna were in court fighting over the royalties recently. This is a moneymaker. These are not
government
agencies.
Here in New Zealand, we only have one approved vaccine.
What's that?
Here in New Zealand, we only have one approved vaccine.
Which one?
And it's the Pfizer vaccine.
Oh God, that's probably the worst one.
It is the only vaccine that's been approved because it has the lowest risk of side effects of all of the vaccines.
Yeah, unless you get
both my wife and I
are
vaccinated.
Yes,
we had no serious side effects.
What's that now?
I said both my wife and I are vaccinated. We had no serious side effects.
Well, God bless that. That's you know, that's wonderful.
And one
of
the reasons that I chose to get vaccinated, and I'll tell you, is because I knew this was coming.
Okay.
I could see the way Jacinda was working with all of the levels of control and all the things that she was hinting at in all of her press conferences.
That's the prime
about
minister.
The new levels of government control that were coming into place. And I said, look, I won't be able to do anything. I won't even be able to go to work if I don't get my vaccine. So I'm going to have to do that.
Would you have
done it
otherwise?
I also want to be able to travel the world and not have to worry about, you know, whether or not I have to quarantine in a country for 2 weeks.
If it was completely optional, would you have done it?
If it was completely optional and there was going to be no level of restriction globally, then no, I probably wouldn't have, because it's not a risk.
Exactly. You're at far greater risk from the vaccine. And I hate to say that, but it's true. Now I'm going to have to worry about you. Thanks. Great. And then there's another friend I have to worry about. But you're far greater risk.
I'm at greater risk of getting hit by a meteor.
Okay.
I just turned 40.
Which brings us back to astronomy. Yeah, yeah. I don't agree.
Yeah.
I think that's wrong. I've had a lot of experts on the show.
I'm at no risk of getting sick from COVID. So, you know.
Not true either. We got an awful lot of people. And in fact, you look at the Israeli studies, they've got a whole bunch, it's one of the most vaccinated places in the world. And they've got staggering COVID rates. You look at states like Florida and Texas, which actually are, you know, it's an option. In fact, they've banned mandates in Florida. You know, our statistics get better and better all the time. You look at Sweden that never locked down, never masked, never had a mask or a vaccine requirement. It's one of the safest places in the world. You look at, or the most COVID-free places. You look at the African countries where they're all taking ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. What's that? What's that? Say it again. I'm sorry.
Didn't Norway just recently delist it as a pandemic?
I think so. I don't know what the Norway policy is. I know Sweden's policy. I imagine they might be close.
I think Norway's policy recently was to say it's not a pandemic. It's not even an issue. Just forget about it.
Yeah. Well, that's what New Zealand should do. Why don't you guys do that and stop this ridiculous mandate nonsense? It's going to cause you more problems. It's going to cure.
Because we have a prime minister who was elected in a landslide victory, who felt that now is the time to take complete control of government.
Yeah, in other words, a dictator.
Yeah.
You've got a dictatorship in New Zealand. Now, is that what you expected when you moved there? Yeah, obviously the answer is no, but I mean, you know, so now that you've moved there into a dictatorship, what are you going to do about it?
Well, for the most part, because it's a fairly benign dictatorship, I'm going to live my life.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to enjoy it as best I can and not worry about the politics so much. Because I have no right to worry about the politics. Anyway, I can't vote, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Do you have plans to become a New Zealand citizen? Is that even allowed, or a permanent immigrant? How does it work?
So there's a lot of hoops to jump through to become a permanent resident if you're from any other country other than Australia. There's so many things to go through, and it's so weird because some people will get granted their permanent residency status within 6 months of moving here. I've been here 3 years and I'm still fighting with the government to give me permanent residency status.
What's their objection?
They can't verify my character.
They should call me. I'll tell them you're a character. No problem. Why can't you verify your character?
This is the funniest story that you'll hear about a criminal record ruining somebody's life, okay?
Oh, please, please.
So I do have a criminal record.
Elucidate. Yes, now I'm curious. What is it?
Yes. So New Zealand isn't exactly sure what degree I'm a criminal, right?
Okay.
Because we can't get any details on it.
Don't forget, we have a worldwide audience, by the way. I just want to let you know, but before you go too far, hold on. Okay.
Yep.
I was going to say, we do have a worldwide audience, and this is a permanent podcast. Before you elaborate further, I just want to let you know that.
Fine. I don't care that the whole world knows.
Okay. Well, feel free.
My FBI background check shows that I have a second-degree misdemeanor. Okay.
Oh, no.
So in New Zealand, a second-degree misdemeanor is higher than a first-degree misdemeanor, where in the United States, it's the opposite of that.
Oh, okay. So they got
first degree
first
misdemeanor
of
is petty stuff here in New Zealand. Second degree is like you did something really bad. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the U.S., the first degree misdemeanor is jail time. Second degree misdemeanor is usually a $50 fine or something stupid.
So, they're thinking that your second degree is actually serious, even though here it's nothing. So they got that backwards.
Correct.
Still. Okay, I got it. All right.
Yes. This is fascinating. And so I've been trying desperately to get a hold of the court case that I was involved in, where my dog got out of my yard. And I got a $50 fine for leash law violation.
Uh-huh. This is getting better. So
so a leash law violation is holding up my residency status here in New Zealand.
And they can't verify it. They can't, like, this is the 21st century. Can't they, like, email the court and get a copy of that record and just say, oh, it's a leash law violation. Welcome to New Zealand. They can't do that?
That'd be nice. No, because the leash law violation happened in Arizona in around 2004.
Oh.
So we're talking 17 years ago. And back then, Arizona was still using stone knives and bearskins to record their...
Okay, so there is no record that they can trace? They'd have to get, like, a paper copy of it and send it by airmail?
And because Arizona doesn't keep petty misdemeanors on file longer than 7 years, there is no paperwork.
So how do they know about it then?
Because the FBI has a record of it. But all they have is a conviction for a second-degree misdemeanor.
And you paid your $50 fine? Or what was the fine?
No, so here's where it gets even better. I didn't pay the fine.
Oh, you
I forgot about
fine.
It. Yeah.
You know,
I forgot
actually,
about the
I
fine because it was only $50 and I completely forgot about it. It flipped my mind.
So
6 months later, I'm driving down the road and I get pulled over by a police officer and I get taken to jail because I had an outstanding warrant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can relate.
I get to jail.
I got a similar,
the judge,
I got a similar
the
story.
You tell me you're here on an outstanding warrant for leash law violation? And I went, yes, Your Honor. And he said, how about I sentence you to time served and you plead guilty? And I said, sounds like a good deal to me. I plead guilty.
Yeah, no, I had a similar thing happen. This is hysterical. No, that's an amazing story. I got a jaywalking ticket back in Oakland. I'm in flight school. All right. I got a jaywalking ticket. There was nobody on the street. It was a Sunday morning. There was a cop at the far end of the street. He must have been bored. And because there's no traffic, I just crossed the street, right? Like a thousand times before. There's nobody there. It's Sunday morning. He comes ripping down the street with the lights blaring and the siren going. And he pulls me over walking. You know, he says, you were jaywalking. Yeah. And your point is what, officer? This is what I'm thinking, right? He says, well, you can't do that. Sir, there's nobody, there's no traffic here except you. you still can't do that. It gives me a ticket. And I thought it was a warning, right? I looked at it. I said, there's no fine here. He said, well, look on the back. And I looked on the back. There was no fine, but there was a number to call. So in Oakland, in the 80s, you were supposed to call, as the late 80s, you're supposed to call the court to find out what your fine is. I'm like, what kind of judicial system? So I forgot about it, right? Because I didn't see a fine. I didn't even worry about it. Years later, I'm driving in San Francisco, and I made a left turn that was legal the day before, but they just put up a brand new sign. And so the cops, of course, were there. You know, I call him Officer Dickless, and Officer Dickless works for the park police. It's the wannabe cops, you know, branch of the government where they can't get a real cop job, so they become park police. And yep. So Officer Dickless pulls me over. This guy was like the biggest power trip. He's like the worst person you'd ever want to be a cop, because all he was on was a power trip. He says, you're broken the law? I said, no, I haven't broken the law. And in fact, the sign just went up, his head to go up this morning. It was brand new, you know. So, look, I'm sorry I did this. Okay. You know, I figure I'd get a warning. So, you know, and then he comes back. He says, you know, I hate it when people lie to me. I said, what do you mean lie to you? He says, this is a bench warrant for your arrest. Oh, really? For what? You know, jaywalking. I said, you got to be, you know, effing kidding me, right? this bench warrant for I thought this was dealt with years ago. What are you talking about? There wasn't even a fine. Well, apparently there was. All right. So he says, sign this. You know, I said, what am I signing? He says, I don't have time for this. I said, sign this. So I'm not going to sign without reading it. He says, if you don't sign it, I'm going to arrest you. Arrest me for what? You know, for you know, having a bench warrant for your arrest. We're going to haul you into. And I thought to myself, I'm not going to go through this hassle. Okay, I'll sign the damn thing, right? I'm young, I'm like 20s. Now I would probably, you know, read it, you know, take a picture of it, you know, post it on Facebook. I said, Officer Dickless here. It's not his real name, obviously. That's what I call him. He's my yeah. You know, my pet name for this guy, right? You know, and so
Officer Junk.
Officer what?
Officer Junkless.
Well, okay, you can do that too. Yeah, well, this is more inclusive. Yeah, Gene's probably going, what the hell are these guys talking about? So feel free to join us, Gene. Anyway, so this guy, and he's like, I hate it when people lie to me. You know, you can't do that. And now I'm really mad at you. I said, what, mad at me for what? I mean, there were five cars ahead of me that made the same illegal left turn, but I was the one in line, so he pulls me over, right? Plus, the other cars were like Mercedes and BMWs, and I was driving the poor little Toyota. And so, but it was just fascinating. So go to court, right? It gets better. Right?
Yeah,
you want to talk about CAFCA?
Right?
What's that?
Let's pull over the person who probably can't afford to pay the ticket.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because either I was last in line or he didn't want to pull over the Mercedes and BMWs because they probably all had fancy lawyers, and he knew that I didn't. So anyway, so I signed this thing, and I get this summons for whatever it was. And so I called the court, and I said, what is this bench warrant? Oh, yeah, you bench warrant. This is like, you know, 5-6 years later, right? And so there's a bench warrant. This is how often I get pulled over, right? So there's a bench warrant all this time for failing to appear. That was what the warrant was for. It wasn't for the jaywalking. It was failing. I remember the story was failing to appear. So I said, well, you never told me to appear. Well, that's not for us. We don't do that. You have to call to find out if you have to appear. Why would I call to find out if I have to appear for something that doesn't have a fine, you know, doesn't have a, it looks like a warning that was done with, you know, 5 years ago. Well, that's just the way it works. Wait, what works? Obviously it doesn't work. So anyway, so I get a court date and I go to court.
Yeah,
and I was going to explain to the judge, look, you guys never told me to appear. You know, I don't have to appear. And so the first thing the administrative, not even a real judge, the administrative law judge says is, you know, not to, you know, saying that we didn't tell you to appear is not an excuse for failing to appear. So they've already convicted me before I even get started. So I thought, all right, how can I get out of this without going to jail? And it turned out, and it was a $150 fine for failing to appear, which I paid, you know, pleaded no contest and just left. And what I would, now that was in my 20s. What I would do now, of course, is scream and yell at the judge, make a big fuss, get arrested, and, you know, being a talk show host, make a big scene about it. Or I would just do it anyway and say, look, no, this is unjust. You can't accuse me of failing to appear if you didn't tell me to appear. That's just insane. But anyway, so I have a similar story. So much for the justice system. Is it as bad in New Zealand, or are they actually better about this kind of stuff? It turns out their immigration.
No,
go ahead.
I know we only got like a minute or so left, but
there's
a lot more
we'll
free on stuff.
Stay till Dave comes on. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. But yeah, there's just so many things that you can do here that are not legal or that are not legal in the States. Just
like what?
Case in point, for example, you know, there's the intent laws in the U.S. Like if you have a open alcohol container in your car, you intended to drink it and therefore you get a DUI.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
No such thing here.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
They don't take the idea of intent. It's really about the law is the law. If you broke it, then you get arrested. If you intend to break it, but you didn't do it, nothing they're going to do.
Well, that's actually called prior restraint. That's actually illegal. It's unconstitutional because we have innocent until proven guilty, and we have due process, and we have prior restraint. That's why, like, our red flag gun laws, where an ex spouse or partner or nasty neighbor or some of the or boss that doesn't like you can say, well, call the police and say, I think this person's a danger. They might commit a felony. They might kill a whole bunch of people. You better take all their guns. And then of course it goes to the judge. The judge gets signs an order, and it goes to the police, and the SWAT team's on through your door at 2 a.m. Based on a rumor an accusation that somebody made up, so this is why prior restraint laws don't work and are unconstitutional, because now you're arresting people for what someone thinks they might do in the future, maybe. That's no standard of justice. So I don't like intent.
So
laws.
There's also no jaywalking laws, right?
Now you tell me, great, thanks.
Wherever you want, whenever you want, it's at your own risk if you hit by a car that's on you.
Oh, okay. So there. All right. Yeah. So actually, I should jaywalk in New Zealand. Okay, there's no leash law.
Well, there is some leash laws, but for the most part, you can let your dog run free as long as they don't bite anybody.
Okay. So why is it New Zealand seems generally more tolerant? Is it that we're just overregulated here, which I think we are, because you've got a dictatorship in some areas like COVID, but it seems like a lot of other areas you're more free. Is it just the population just kind of self-regulates, or what do you think the difference is?
Pretty much. So if you look in just take any issue at all in the U.S. and it's like a 50-50 divide straight down the middle, right?
Pretty much here in New Zealand,
it's like you can pretty much take any issue and it's a 90-10 divide.
Wow.
So there's the few outliers that, whatever the topic is, the few outliers that go, oh, I really don't agree with that. And most of the rest of the country is like, I'm on board. Let's do it.
I guess that was what they call a homogeneous society. But it's not, though. What groups do you have? I know you got the indigenous, the Maori population. How are they doing these days?
Yeah, so the Maori population actually has pretty good representation in government. We've got two official languages, of course, English and Maori, Te Reo Maori. I've learned a few words. Actually met a few Maori people who are just absolutely wonderful, wonderful people that we've traded indigenous stories with. And
see, I was curious about that too, because your background is Native American. Yeah, is it Chippewa, if I remember?
Yes.
Okay. So,
or as we call it, the Anishinaabe.
Say it again. What do you call?
The Anishinaabe.
Anishinaabe. Okay, I want to put that in my brain here. So I was curious about this because we've talked about this before, and of course I had Chief Dan Skyhorse on the show for a long time, probably like a year and a half, and hopefully he'll be back after New Year's. We have the Creek Tribe report, and so it's. Do you ever have a theme for that? This is made, and play this out. It's something I haven't played for a long time. This is actually made specially for our show. Tell me what you think of this. The drum. Heartbeat of the Creek people. Like the first heartbeat you hear before you were born. Like the heartbeat of the living spirit in all things. Join us each week at this time as we explore issues and topics important to the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe and American Indians across this great country. Join in as we enter the world of the Creek Tribe and see the world as they do through the eyes of Chief Dan Skyhorse, or in the Muscogee language, Chothloko Suta Miko.
Love that.
Yeah, it was made by a Creek chief and some other folks that they heard about what I was doing. I started with Chief Dan and some of the other members of the tribe back on WBY. And it took me a while to get the folks on. First of all, I had to gain the trust, you know, the tribe. They weren't, especially the previous chief was kind of suspicious. This is a guy coming out here from California wants to interview me. What the hell's going on here? Anyway, but it's a voice I wanted to have on the show. And this is why I want Chief Dan back. But it was fabulous. And they actually made me a member of the Creek tribe. But this another Creek chief, and I've forgotten his name, heard about what we were doing and was so, you know, impressed that they actually, you know, made this for us. So that's a specially made thing. And so, I'm bugging Dan because I want to get him back on the show. We talked about some amazing issues. But, yeah, so trying to get him back, trying to keep this going. So if you have reports of any, you know, I don't know if you're still in touch with Native American News here, but feel free. And I'd be very curious about what you were talking about with the Maoris and you know, were there similar experiences with government and history and, you know, treatment of Native Americans versus Maoris in New Zealand? Did you guys talk about that at all?
Well, it was very, very different. You know, the mindset and culture today is fairly similar, but the way the Maori were treated was very, very different than the way Native Americans were treated. You know, it was pretty much an extermination policy for Native Americans in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here in Maori, it was a peaceful coexistence policy.
Yeah, that's completely different.
There was
in Australia was different,
too.
Battles,
which is the first spot, but then there was a treaty signed and basically gave the Maori huge, huge rights and holdings within the government and within the country. And so there really wasn't anything to fight about anymore.
Yeah. Yes, we should have done it here. But now, when was this? Was this after most of the genocide was done against the Native Americans here? Because New Zealand took a while longer to get going. Yeah.
Yeah, if my history serves me correctly, the Cook and some of the others, Abel Tasman, didn't get here until about the 1670s. And really didn't, you know, Europeans didn't much explore New Zealand a whole lot until about the mid-1700s.
Okay,
and
yeah.
I think it was in the 1700s when the Treaty of Waitangi was signed.
Now, of course, Australia developed a lot faster and earlier, but New Zealand, was it just too remoter or too mountainous? Or I wonder why it took, you know, folks longer to discover, because it's a beautiful place. I've only spent one day in Auckland, but you know a little bit about New Zealand. I definitely want to come back and tour. So I'm going to come bug you. We're going to broadcast from New Zealand, you know, one of these days. Well, Gene, what do you think? You want to go to New Zealand after Belize? Get here on the conversation. I'm waiting for our next reporter to come on, but like I say, we got a few minutes extra before Dave gets here.
It's open in April, so.
Yeah. Oh, but I'm not going to come down as long as you have a vaccine mandate or a mask mandate. I'm not coming down then. I want to wait till you guys are free again.
Oh, yeah, that's never going to happen. Well, I guess I won't see you then.
Well, we just have to do it this way. Well, because I want to do
that's
it.
Right.
It's just my personal protest.
I'm in April.
Yeah.
Say that again.
Well, no, I was just checking something real quick here to see my next caller. Dave might not be here, so you know, I've already, you know, taken up an hour of your time. If you're still wide awake and want to continue, feel free, because this is fascinating. But if you have to go, I understand, and we'll just pick it up next time. But you know, Dave gets busy. So he works with Santa Rosa. He's a co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers. So whereas I do, you know, the show here and a lot of the bill writing and the sort of behind the scenes stuff, he has the people that go to the meetings and carry the signs and do the protests. He's much more of an organizer and more of an activist, you know, publicly. I'm more of an activist, you know, kind of behind the scenes. But what we do best, I think, and I'm best at, you know, finding the exact law, finding where the problems, writing the corrective legislation, and inspiring other folks to write their ideas, like the drunk driving reform. And so, but he gets busy sometimes. Hopefully he'll be on soon. Anyway, this is now, I'm just not thinking where I want to go from here. I'm going to get my long list of things to do. So how about business opportunities? Is this a place that people, you know, can, should come down to and try and start a business, or is it more restrictive with things like your, you know, your lease law violation keeping you from being a permanent resident? What do you think?
Well, of course, we want people of good character, right?
Okay.
And they want people who can contribute something to society, because we do have a lot of public health care and things of that nature And there's also, you know, very much like the U.S. where you have Medicare and Social Security. Once you get over a certain age, they have subsidized health care and stipend payments that go out to the elderly. So there's a lot of social policies, I guess, that they want to make sure that you're contributing to society before you start drawing from it.
Well, that makes sense. Otherwise, the government goes bankrupt like ours. So it makes perfect sense.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's nobody going to bail out little old New Zealand population, 5 million.
That's like half what we have
half
in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's interesting. Your population is less than half of San Francisco's for the whole country.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And remember, half of our population lives in Auckland, and half of what's left lives in Wellington.
And the rest of the place is what? Beautiful mountains and scenery and waterfalls and hot springs and, you know, tourist attractions or what? Motorcycle trails?
Yes, that's exactly. It's, you know, I can drive 20 minutes from my house in any direction and get to beautiful, most gorgeous scenery you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah. Well, that's why I want to come down there. I've heard motorcycle tours are a big thing. I don't know if they rent Harleys or people bring their own Harleys down there, but it, you know, it's probably one of the safer places in the world where you can
bring
you know,
your own Harleys.
Road. What's that now?
You know how people who own Harleys are. Have Harley, will travel, right?
Oh, so. Okay. So they bring their Harleys.
Yeah, they bring their Harleys. There's also a big following of Harleys here. Yeah, people love motorcycle touring across the country because it's a very temperate climate year round. So unless you get into the really mountainous regions of the South Island, you really don't get cold temperatures. You don't get snow. It's just you want to go for
a
ride? It's a perfect place.
Yeah. Is there a bridge these days, North South Island? How does one get across? Is it a ferry boat or how do you do it?
No, it's too far for that. So there's a ferry.
Okay.
Yeah. So the ferry goes from Wellington to a little town called Picton.
Okay.
And Picton population about 800.
I'll work at the ferry terminal.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. That's
okay,
right. They all work at the ferry terminal. If they don't work at the ferry terminal, they work at one of the three businesses in town.
Yeah, the restaurant, the bank, and the drugstore, right? Which all cater to the people coming off the ferry.
No.
And the Harley
rental
dealership.
Car agency.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Can't forget the rental car agency.
Oh, that's funny. So cars, what do you, when I got to Australia, and I was in Australia back in the late 60s, early 70s, before I came to the United States, there were all kinds of new cars I had to discover. And there was like the Holden. I think they're out of business now. It was an Australian car company. But so what are you guys driving now? Is there a New Zealand car company? Got any sports cars, muscle cars, classic cars?
No, so there's no New Zealand car manufacturers. You mentioned Holden. Holden's been owned by GM for a long time.
Okay.
And they just finally did away with the Holden name. They're not going to produce it anymore. So you're right about that. They're out of business.
Too bad. They had a car called a Monaro.
People really
like this really sporty muscle car. I'm sorry, go ahead. We're both talking. Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. Then you've got the Toyota Hilux is a huge vehicle here. Everybody wants it because it's Toyota's probably best off-road vehicle.
Okay. We have a lot of
everybody wants the Hilux.
You've got a lot of off-road, don't you? I mean, you don't have like paved super highways. You don't have an Autobahn. You don't have a big interstate highway system, do you? You don't need it because most of the population's in the big cities.
State Highway 1 goes from the tip of the north to the tip of the South Island. So, and it's a pretty good, clean highway. But as far as off-road, our tides here are massive. So when you think of, the difference between high tide and low tide there in Milton or Pensacola, it's like 6 inches. It's not even noticeable.
Right.
But here it's 3 meters.
Ooh. That's about 10 feet.
So at low tide, you can go way, 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 way out. And then when that tide starts to come back in, you better run because it's coming in fast.
I've heard about, Bay of Fundy up in Canada has that similar kind of tide where it's so fast, it's like at a horse's gallop speed. And so people will ride their horses out to the tide. Okay, let's race the tide back in. it's so fast, which is incredible to think about. So is it like a long, very shallow slope and it just comes racing in, or how does it work?
Well, it's a pretty shallow slope. So it doesn't really just come rushing in. It is definitely noticeable. Like Jess and I were sitting out the other day at low tide, and we put our chairs at waterline, And then we said, okay, now we're going to take our chairs because the tide's about to shift. We're going to move them back 10 feet.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to see how long it takes for the tide to come to this point. And it was 5 minutes.
Ouch. Wow. Yeah, this is why we'll talk climate change for a bit, because it's one of the big jokes around my show. And I have a friend of mine, Gregory Wrightstone, who wrote a book, Inconvenient Facts, basically the corrected version of Al Gore's Inconvenient Truths. And so we talk a lot about, you know, actual science here, as opposed to made up stuff, you know, which is basically a, you know, code for socialism. What's going on down there? Are your greenies trying to, and I'm an environmentalist, you know, but I actually deal with, you know, real science and real scientific debate and measurable, you know, satellite temperature measurements and that kind of stuff. What's going on down there? Are they changing your life with climate change or what?
I know we have different viewpoints on this.
Well, that's fine.
So we both follow the science, and we both follow a different science. But that's okay, because science can be wrong. It has been many, many times.
Oh, yeah. So, I don't care if we disagree. I mean, that's fun. I don't mind.
All the things that we thought were facts at one stage, we now know are not facts, right? At one point, mm-hmm. the Earth was the center of the universe. It's not.
Right. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
But it was an interesting scientific fact.
Well, see, I don't think the dispute is whether the climate is changing. The climate is changing. What I dispute is whether man-made, you know, carbon products, carbon dioxide, things like that. And carbon dioxide is plant food. I mean, that's what the plants breathe. So the idea that, that we're creating enough carbon dioxide to block out the heat, the mechanism just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't work. Carbon dioxide is less than 1% of the atmosphere. You know, there's no way that can reflect back enough heat, you know, to the Earth to raise the temperature based on, you know, your SUV exhaust. That makes absolutely no sense. And electric cars aren't any better, because they still have to get power from a power plant, which is coal, nuclear, oil, natural gas, or you know, I think the solar and wind ones are so limited, they're not really effective. So where's the problem? Go ahead.
So that's an interesting topic here in New Zealand right now. They just passed a $8,600 electric vehicle rebate. So you buy an electric vehicle and the government gives you $8,600 back.
Yeah, see, that's crazy.
And the reason for that is almost all of our power is generated by either hydroelectric, wind, or solar.
Okay. Well, that's good.
You know, reliance. We have a few gas power plants, and those are strictly for emergency purposes.
Okay.
And then there's a nuclear power plant that exists.
So there's no
I know what a power plant looks like.
So you actually have a nuclear plant, but it's a contingency just in case.
New Zealand is considered a non-nuclear nation.
Right.
But I know for a fact we have a nuclear power plant in the Waikato, because we had 3 nuclear power plants in Cincinnati. I know exactly what they look like.
Oh, yeah, cooling towers.
And I drove by one. They stick out like a sore thumb. I mean, you see those huge condensers, and you know exactly what it is.
Yeah. Hey, take a picture. Let's post it on Facebook. Here's the nuclear plant that doesn't exist in New Zealand. I'm going to bring on another friend of mine, David Jones, who's a co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers, a sponsor of this show. In fact, you might be interested in this. They've sponsored me to do a report on every founding document. And in fact, next week I'm going to take the Articles of Confederation and point out the Bill of Rights that were in the articles that they purposely left out of the Constitution. So it's going to be kind of interesting. David, you got kind of a treat here. I've got my friend Anthony from New Zealand, who used to live here, moved down there, entrepreneur. So Anthony, you're welcome to stick around as long as you can or want to. But I want to get to Dave and some of our local issues here. So if you have to leave, just let me know.
Absolutely.
First of all, thank you very much. But this has been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure.
Can you stick around or do you have to go? It's up to you.
I probably ought to get going. It's almost 2:30 in the morning, so I probably ought to
get
some sleep.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you so much for calling. We'll do it again as soon as you can and want to stay awake late, because I really appreciate having you on.
Absolutely. No worries. All right. Take care.
All right. You take care, too. Thanks. Anthony Williams, friend of mine, entrepreneur, business guy, packed up, moved to New Zealand, took his wife down there. Off they went. Living the dream, been there 3 years, and it's just interesting to hear the stories, and hopefully he'll be back in a month. He's still online listening. It's kind of funny. David, sir, welcome to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're international, dude. We're talking to New Zealand this morning. Isn't this great?
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah. So let's find out what's going on. Look, I've got a story for you you're not going to believe. But I told a little bit of it earlier. And, Gene, of course, you're welcome to join in as well. But I have absolutely no use for the Republican Party at the local, state, or national level at this point. I am so disgusted with what happened. Not that I'm that upset about it. I mean, it didn't bother me that much, but just the idea, the attitude, realizing these people are going to be absolutely useless to us. So I'll tell you that in a second. But what's going on? How are you? Anything you want to get into? I got a couple of other questions on, I think this is this Milton ordinance, you know, about property. You know, historical society property regulation that some folks are screaming about now too. So where do you want to go this morning? What's happening? What's happening on the local front now that we've covered half the world? it's kind of fun this morning. Yeah.
Well, we've definitely got that city ordinance that you were just referring to. We've been digging into that. We've got the legislative delegate meeting was last night in Escambia County.
Mm-hmm.
So got to speak with all their reps. I wasn't able to attend that one. I try to stay in our county, but from what I understand, it wasn't nowhere near as exciting as it was when we did it in Santa Rosa County, because we've got a few more people that are a little bit more passionate, a little bit more patriotic in our county than we do in Escambia. But then we've got the county commissioners meeting coming up Thursday, I believe it is, tomorrow. So we'll hopefully we've got the hospital issue back on the agenda. We've got a new attorney in the county that one of the representatives, the county commissioners, James Calkins, is going to or wants to set up a meeting with our group, him and the county attorney, to find out legally where we stand with the hospital and what legal actions we can take. So hopefully we'll get that meeting.
If it's possible to join that one, not for the hospital, but for our illegal alien free zone bill, I would love to do that. I don't know if you want to take issues in one meeting or maybe schedule a separate one, but that's something that we need to you know, impose upon these people and see if we can get it through. And if not here, I got to pick another county. And I'll tell you why in a minute. But
right.
That's something that I can join you on. That'd be great. Okay, let me tell you what happened last night, and I'm curious your reaction to it. So I get invited to speak at one of the Republican groups, the oldest Republican, committee here in Santa Rosa County. And it's down in a little place called Gulf Breeze, which I don't really know that well. So it's like this, you know, Gulf Breeze is one of these places. They don't really have a town center. They just have this big mall on both sides of Highway 89, or 90, whatever the highway is. What,
98.
98, okay, there we go. So a big highway going through Gulf Breeze. And so I got invited down to this group, and something, obviously, they first of all, they spelled my name wrong, and they said, you know, writing laws on the radio. And or it was, the title of my talk was Writing Laws on Radio, which makes no sense whatsoever. Anyway, so I get down there, and it seemed like a decent group when I walked in. But so I sat down and listened to the meeting, and a couple of people came up to speak. One of them was one of our local county commissioners, Dave Peach. So Dave Peach was there. So you know I was going to ask him when I had the turn to talk, you know, about our illegal alien free zone bill. And I did when I got my chance. But then Brad Baker was there too. He's the emergency, you know, has an emergency coordinator for like hurricanes and emergency management, things like that. Really cool guy. I've had him on the show before on WBY, and so I'm going to talk to him about coming back on.
Brad Baker is also now the Assistant County Administrator. He got a promotion.
So what's he now again? You got kind of muffled there a bit.
Brad is now promoted to the Assistant County Administrator. He's number three under the county commissioners.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, definitely going to talk to him then. Let's find out. Because we did hurricane preventive things, you know, emergency things you can take care of, you know, ways to sort of, you know, handle whatever the situation was. And one of the things I learned from him, it was interesting. I went to a special meeting. The danger from hurricanes, people don't know if you've never been in one, it's the water. It's the surge. It's not the wind. The wind is bad. I mean, it can still, you know, do things and kill you, but it's the water that is the big problem. And the hurricanes don't go that far inland. When you have to evacuate, 30 miles generally will do it. You know, that'll get you, you know, away from most of the, if not all, the storm surge and the worst effects of the wind, because apparently these things, hurricanes drop quickly as they move inland. And we were here for Hurricane Sally last year. And so it was really interesting. I got pictures of it in Milton when the water, you know, the things along the river were completely flooded, you know, and some of the properties, you know, next to the river were, you know, so it was interesting, you know, knowing what I learned from Brad Baker to be able to deal with this, handle this, and decide whether I wanted to evacuate or not. And it got close as the water was rising up. I had my like go, no go point. The water doesn't get to a certain point. You know, I'll stay. But if it crosses this line I made on the way up to Willing Street, which is one of our streets downtown, I was going to take off. Anyway, here's where it gets interesting, though. So I'm the last person on the program, and just before, Brad spoke. Brad was going to speak, and then I was going to speak. And so then Brad, you know, sits down, and then this grouchy old man, who I still don't know his name, gets up and says, "Okay, we're done, go home." And I'm like, "Wait a minute," you know. And of course, everybody looks at me though, because of my big voice, and I said, "Wait a minute, what's going on? It's my turn to speak," you know, and I'm like really mad now because I've driven all the way from Milton down to Gulf Breeze. Okay. So you folks in Azerbaijan that don't know where this is, it's inconvenient. It's like 40 minutes with traffic. So here I am down there. And for our listeners in New Zealand, first of all, let me welcome our listeners to New Zealand also. I mean, I'm sure Anthony told a few friends. You guys might be asleep now. You catch us on podcast. Okay. That works out too. Anyway. So grouchy old man gets up and says to go home. And I'm like, "No, it's my turn. You got me on the program there." So he looks down. "Oh, yeah, you are." So I'm thinking, okay, I've already got a hostile audience. They were trying to get rid of me. I said, "Now this is going to be fun." So I looked at the folks and said, "Do you want to go home or can I make my presentation?" Said, "Oh, yeah, go ahead and make your presentation." I'm like, "Okay, fine." So I get up and I start talking about Action Radio. And they were interested. And these folks were interested in what we were doing. I asked Dave Peach about, I said, "Have you heard about our bill? Do you know about our illegal alien free zone bill? It's based on asset forfeiture. There's no state involvement. There's no federal involvement. We're not rounding people up. We're just seizing property to make it impossible for illegal aliens to live in our county." "Oh, yeah, I've heard of it." I said, "Good. What do you think?" "Well, I need to study it more." "Okay, fine." Typical, you know, politician's answer, but I'm going to follow up with him now that I know he knows and he knows me. So there's a face behind this bill. So we're going to talk. So he was pretty good, actually. I mean, that's kind of expected. I didn't want to put him on the spot in front of all those people if he wasn't familiar with it, but I wanted to at least ask him so that he knew that I knew. And then we went back and forth with some questions, and people were interested, and they got the website, and we were going great. And then this person in the back row says, "How many bills have you actually got passed?" I thought, "Oh, here we go." Like, all right. So that's a setup question. And I said, "Well, none." And I said, "That's because you guys don't support me." You know, this is what I got after. Now I'm mad, right? Because I knew this was a setup question. I've had that same, I think it was the same guy that asked me in the Republican meeting you and I were at. So,
yeah.
So he asked me this question. And I said, "Why would you, you know, first of all, anybody who's interested in what we're doing, that's the last thing they care about is how many bills have passed. They want to get involved in and help bills to pass. That's a normal reaction, okay?" So I said, "Well, because you guys, you don't support me. You don't endorse my bills. You don't support my show. You know, you don't call the show." I said, "You haven't endorsed the bills. You haven't made a public statement on the bills." I said, "That's why they're not passing." I said, "You guys, the entire Republican Party has abandoned the future of citizen legislation. You're not even participating." I said, "That's why they're not passing." And of course, everybody looks at this guy. "Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, okay, fine." And then a couple minutes later, Grouchy Pants gets up and he looks at me. I'm speaking. I think it was about our bill on Section 230, rewriting the Communications Decency Act. And so Grouchy Pants gets up and he looks at me. He says, "Are you a registered Republican?" I said, "Why, no, I'm not." He said, "Well, you have to go sit down. You're done." And he just spoke in exactly that tone. Really? And how would you know I wasn't a registered Republican? Because obviously he knew about this ahead of time. So I figure somebody who we both know, I'm not going to mention his name, you know, on the show, I think text Grouchy Pants. Grouchy Pants gets up and I said, "Okay, fine. I'm done. And anybody wants more information, come talk to me after the meeting." And I was really, you know, I don't know whether I was embarrassed for, you know, everybody else that was there, or for whatever. And I wasn't initially that mad. I thought it was funny actually, but now I'm like, "You idiots, you pissed off the wrong guy. You insulted somebody publicly who has a radio show." And I said, "I will never go to another Republican meeting. I have no use for the party. The geldings prove themselves, you know, the geldings I thought they were. These people have no new ideas. They don't want new ideas. They don't want to be active. They don't want to participate, you know, in any kind of activist political politics. They want, and all they tried to do was register me. The first thing, they all ran up and said, "Well, you got to register for the Republican Party." I said, "Why?" "Well, you know, it's because we're the Republican Party. You have to register, you know, so you can participate and vote in the primaries." I said, "Why?" I said, you people appoint rhinos. You're not doing anything. I said, this party has done nothing for the audits. They've done nothing to get rid of Brandon. I said, I even talked about, you know, Operation Defund Brandon, where hopefully we'll shut down the government in the next election. They've done none of that stuff. All they wanted me to do is register. I said, okay, I'm done. Thanks and no thanks. You know, so I think we need either an independent organization. Well, you already have one, Santa Rosa Volunteers. But, you know, the geldings have proven themselves far worse than I ever imagined. I thought, you know, I've been censored. The party that believes in, you know, individual rights and limited government and free speech censored me last night. That's where I stand. David?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I had the same realization. They're not going to make me quit and go away that easily. But same thing happened with the Veterans Day Parade when they so they invited us, they invited other groups, they invited Cindy with Citizens for Medical Freedom. She's mm-hmm. on your show on Thursday, so
Thursday morning,
they invited 6:30. Her and her group. And then at the very last, I mean, literally the ninth hour, 9 p.m. the night before, they start telling her what she can and can't say and what the signs can and can't say. And, you know, of course, then I pull all my resources and all of that, you know, every sign that I made and every truck that was going to be in the parade. So I pull everything. And, of course, they're not used to somebody taking that stance. But, yeah, they want the same tired ideas. They want people to line up and vote. And they want everybody to think that the only power they have in politics is their vote, and that's absolutely not true. You know, when you have you're given two options and to choose from, and both of them are horrific. Mm-hmm. That's not a choice. It's two sides of the same coin, and that's what they want people to continue to think. They want to take this this energy that's came from the election and COVID and these things that have gotten people off the couch and activated. They want mm-hmm. to harness that energy and make it absolutely useless. They want the roadblocks. They want, you know, oh, here, we're the Republican Party. We're the good guys. Let's defeat the evil Republicans. We'll get or the evil Democrats. Well, guess what? Both of you guys work for the same team as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the deep state. The world has really come down to globalists and Marxists and American patriots and independents. And independent is the largest party. I mean, there are more independents out there than there are people registered for Democrats and Republicans. And rightly so, because we're all so disgusted with them. I want to look into ways to actually either eliminate political parties within actual legislatures. Outside, of course, is free assembly. They can do what they want. And I think I would unleash the money. They can spend whatever they want. If you're spending money on behalf of somebody, then spend whatever you want. Do what you want. It's free speech. That's not a problem. But if you are, if you're actually in office, I don't think anybody should be able to belong to a party, because you shouldn't be able to determine the majority of the committee chair or the committee chairs by the majority party. I don't think the party should be able to, require allegiance to the party to vote certain ways. So I think party politics is actually destroyed. A lot of this country, a lot of the political process, and I would definitely end that. Hey, Anthony, you're still on the line in New Zealand, so I don't know if you're still there, but if you want to join in the conversation again, feel free.
Yeah, I am.
Good. Okay. So what do you think so far?
Yeah, I actually had something to say on that. It's kind of interesting here in New Zealand because there are so many different political parties. There's the two majors, Labour and National, but you have the ACT Party, the Green Party. There's mm-hmm. so many others that are there. And the thing is, they all get votes and they all get representation in government. And mm-hmm. they get representation in government based off of the number of votes that they receive, not the people that were voted for, but the number of votes that they receive get chairs in the in Parliament.
Yes, and
so
a
very interesting change.
Well, now I need your help with this too, because when we take Action Radio to New Zealand in a bigger way and in Australia in a bigger way, I've got a person I'm working with there because they're under a dictatorship also. And we're going to get to England. We're going to go through the English-speaking world. We're already in Belize, you know. And so as we move through these different countries, I need to learn. I used to know when I was Canadian, you know, up in Canada, you know, I'm still Canadian by birth, but it's interesting. But I need to relearn the parliamentary system. So when as I remember it, and it's been a while since I've taken a look at this, you've got a prime minister who is a regular member of parliament. They just happen to lead the party that is in the majority, and you can have any number of parties. And it's, so you're voting, I guess, do you vote for the party or you vote for a person and the person, you know, gets in the party that has the most people voted for. How does it work again? I think I missed something.
It's a little bit convoluted. I don't have the right to vote, so I'm not exactly sure on it. But I've seen a couple of elections now, and it appears to be that you vote for the party, and then you also vote for your local representative.
Okay.
And
that can be different, can't
it? If your local representative gets a massive majority, then they're going to be the one that's put in place. But let's say, for example, that 10% of the country votes Green Party as their party tick. Well, then Parliament has to be made up of 10% Green Party ministers.
Oh, that's weird.
So whether they won or not, they have to be put in place.
See, that's totally screwed up. Well, of course, we're screwed up here too in different ways, but that's interesting. So how do the laws actually get passed? Who can people introduce them to the members of Parliament? Like we can introduce them here to members of Congress and the state legislatures and the local governments.
Yes. So you can introduce a bill to your local MP, they're called, Minister Parliament.
Right.
And they take it to the Parliament floor and get it submitted. There's also other ways that you can submit it, submit a bill directly to the Parliament floor through petitioning the government. So a lot is very similar to the way it's handled in the U.S., but the representation by party is what's so distinctly different. During the last election cycle, it was they called it a coalition government. So Green Party, the ACT Party, and Labor had to get together, and the MPs had to vote together to say, okay, Jacinda will be our prime minister. Whereas this last time, Labor won in a landslide. It was more; they got more than 50% of the national vote. So Jacinda was just installed by the Labor Party as a repeat winner.
Is that her first name or last name, Jacinda?
But can you imagine if the Green Party got together with the, you know, with the Republicans and said, "Okay, we're voting lockstep with you this time, and we're installing the president that you want."
That would be interesting. That would be very interesting. So Jacinda, like I said, I don't know if you heard my question, but I still think it's remarkable the connection we have now through the internet. We're talking directly to New Zealand, you know, as we're doing the show today, folks. So this is fascinating. In fact, if you have any questions, you've always wanted to know about New Zealand, now's your chance. Is Jacinda her first name, last name, or is that her only name?
We all call her by her first name, Jacinda, but it's Jacinda Ardern.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, interesting. Well, I want to talk more about this. I don't want to take away from Dave's time too much, but this is, you know, the parliamentary system. I have to learn more about it, so we're going to work on that. Dave, what do you think? You want to head for New Zealand? We'll do a week of shows down there? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know about all that, but...
Okay, well, let's get back to some of the local things here. This Milton Ordinance. Now, I'm a big believer in history and historic preservation. In fact, I was working with some folks over in Pensacola, but, you know, saving the oak trees. Save the trees and save the old buildings. Because once they're gone, they're gone. You know, you can't wait around a couple hundred years to get them back in. That just makes no sense to me. And yes, you know, that is, if you're buying private property that is deemed historical, then you got to go by the historical rights. It's like if you buy a property next to an airport, you can't complain about the airport. Because it was there first. So if the tree is there first, if the old house is there first, and it's deemed historic, then you don't have the right to tear that down. You're ruining historic preservation. Same thing goes for national parks and things like that. You can't do it. So what's this ordinance say, and who's objecting to it? I know the Republicans are, and you know what I feel about them now. So do you know much about this ordinance?
That's exactly my problem with it. So. This is a 47-page ordinance, which you've written a lot of laws. There's absolutely no reason for anything to be that big, especially a city ordinance.
That's true.
What the background of this is this is actually a state-sponsored ordinance. Reason that it was introduced to the city council was to procure additional funding for our historic district. So probably 80%, 85% of the document is a mirror image of the already existing language that we have in our historic district. Now, the chairperson of the Republican Executive Committee in Santa Rosa County is the one who has thrown an absolute fit over this ordinance. They've procured $3,000 in advertising to advertise on local newspapers, social media, signage, etc., to fight this ordinance. That in and of itself, because they haven't allocated any money whatsoever to fight, I don't know, COVID mandates or government shutdown or mask or anything of that nature. So
interesting.
I do know that the lady who chairs that group also owns property in the historic district, so she has a skin in the game as far as that goes. Reading the ordinance, there is some things in it that I don't like. There's violations of the Fourth Amendment if you get in there. If there's a property that they deem is being neglected in the historic district, or they can gain access to the property, they can go on the property, etc. So that I have an issue with. If you're violating private property rights and violating the Fourth Amendment, so that needs to be rewritten. The language is kind of loose, so it kind of encapsulates the entire city of Milton and not just the historic district. So that's a problem as well.
Yeah, see, and my initial thing was it sounded like it was taking all the power away from the historic district. Maybe that's the bad impression from the advertising or just from what I heard about it. There was an email sent out about this. I don't even have to tell me which group, but this is, you're talking about the executive committee person for one of the Republican groups is pushing the recall. Okay. We'll talk about this off the air. Then we'll decide whether, are they a public figure or should we not mention them at this point?
She goes to Tallahassee. She's fairly public. I mean, Mary Goldman, her on your last program. So,
right. Okay. So we'll talk about who it is. Yeah. See, I like to protect people that are independent, that don't want to be public figures. But if you, like, I'm a public figure now, you know, you are too. So if people want to say things, you know, there's a difference between being public and not. And so people that aren't, if you put your name to stuff, you know, you're an advocate, you know, you're coming out with a particular political position, now you're fair game. Okay. You know, for us to support or criticize. And so that's why, but I always like to make sure, you know, before I do that, because I want to allow people to, especially we have people calling the show anonymously. And so I want to protect the right of folks to do that. But on the other hand, if you're public, then, you know, you're already out there. So, you know, that's how it goes. All right. So we need to, I want to see that ordinance. And if it's not protecting. Here's the thing with historic preservation. They can go too far. I mean, they can regulate your entire life. You know, it's like, you know, Karens who run homeowner associations. Don't fly the American flag. Well, screw you. I'm going to fly the American flag. Okay. So they're ridiculous ordinances and they're good ordinances. They're ordinances that protect property and they're those that micromanage, you know, you down to such an extreme level, you know, that your grass has to be 2 3/4 inches high. Give me a break. You know, so at what level, we need to find out at what level this historic society is being regulated and can they do their job to preserve, you know, the buildings and the old trees and things like that without micromanaging to the point where nobody can do anything with their property. So that's what we need to find, if there's a decent balance in there. If there isn't, we need to rewrite those provisions and hand them back to them and say, here, we think this is a better plan. So I'm happy to work with you on that.
That's kind of what I'm doing now. I've dealt with two of the council members, Ms. Shannon Weiss, as well as the new one, good Lord, Vernon. So Vernon's actually the gentleman who introduced the bill, and I think that's another big problem that the Republican executive has to do with this, because he is a registered Democrat. So
what? Wait. So he's a registered Democrat pushing something through a Republican executive committee? Now I'm confused.
No, he's pushing it through the city council.
Right.
And that's another thing that they have to do with it. And now, you know, I don't like the fact that Vernon's registered as a Democrat, but if you speak to the man and you look at his history, my impression is he's a whole lot more conservative than some of the members of that Republican Party. So I personally have a problem with the decisions that he's made.
He's on the historical commission, isn't he? Isn't he on the historical commission?
He has been for 20 years.
Yeah. I've heard good things about him. But I mean, like I say, if something's changed, then I need to know. But as far as I'm concerned, I've heard nothing but good things about Vernon. So this is a good thing. Well,
I don't have any issues with Vernon. Now, he acknowledges that there are parts of this ordinance that need to be rewritten or changed. The fact that the ordinance actually changes the Historic Preservation Committee from a committee to a regulatory agency, that's one of the biggest problems that I have. So now all elected officials can regulate, can issue citations, things of that nature to people in the historical district. That coupled
can they regulate,
with the fact that go ahead.
Well, can they regulate which businesses come here? Because we had a problem before with an alcohol ordinance that the leftover dinosaurs didn't want to have any alcohol businesses, which meant no restaurants, which meant, they said, well, you're going to have nothing but biker bars. So the place is going to be destroyed. Well, no. I mean, there's a lot of places that sell alcohol. In fact, alcohol, brings a lot of people to restaurants, and especially, the Chianti and the Italian restaurant I hope to see, on the banks of our river one day. But if this regulatory agency comes in, could they regulate the historic district to their own liking as opposed to bringing in a bunch of different things that most of us would want to see there, like the courthouse marketplace, for example?
Right.
Would they regulate that? Yeah. Would they regulate that out of existence if they wanted? I mean, who's going to make up this committee or this regulatory agency?
I would assume that at least for now it would be the existing members of the historical committee. Which are appointed by the city council, but none of that's set in stone. And there's still a lot of talking to do about this. It's only been introduced into the very first committee of the whole meeting. It still has to go through another committee of the whole meeting, and then after that, it's got to go to the actual city council meeting to be officially voted on. So there's a lot that has to be discussed on this. And one of the things for me is going to be, well, do we have the ability to change the language on this? It is a state-sponsored program, and the entire intended purpose is to gain more funding. So if we change these things, is the state going to still give us the funding? Because if not, then there's nothing wrong with our existing ordinances on the Historic Society. So. We just need to leave it alone. But those are questions that need to be answered. Big evil thing like the executive committee is trying to make it. She has skin in the game, and she dislikes the fact that it was introduced by a Democrat. And that's that party politic nonsense is what we're trying to get away from.
See, what it looked like to me was that the housing developers, the people that are making a fortune, especially the ones that are contributing to our county commissioners, elections and or whatever their buddy arrangements that we may or may not know about or find out about. It just looked to me that this was a big housing developer thing, so they could do whatever they wanted, wherever they wanted, and make this county grow as fast as they wanted, and regulations be damned that they didn't care if we preserve the Historical Society. Were they going to try and get a four-lane thing through under this new ordinance? Were they going to do everything to destroy the town and make it just this short-term, quick-buck commercial enterprise as opposed to preserving the historical district and the quality of life here so that we can advance this town and have it be like a strong town, like Chuck Marin of Strong Town says, and have the different businesses and have the courthouse turn into the courthouse marketplace and have the riverboat tours and have the restaurants and have the concerts and have the Imogene with the national guests and have all the things that we want to have here to make this a very vibrant, viable, historic, a living historical district as opposed to one that's more like a museum. I want the living one. And I'm concerned that the developers are going to develop us right out of our historic district if they take over and get rid of this ordinance. But that's why I wanted to find out about it. Is that still a problem, though?
Not in the city with this ordinance. This ordinance, honestly, reading it, I think would be a big, giant pain in the ass for the developers, and it wasn't introduced by any of them. Honestly, I think it would be the other direction as far as this ordinance goes.
Okay, all right, well, that's good. See, I didn't know much about it.
Brand new government agency, right?
Yeah, go ahead, Anthony. You can talk directly to
David. It would create
David.
A brand new government agency, right, Dave?
Yes and no. It would be actually worse because it would be a new agency, but none of them would be elected, so none of them would be accountable to anybody but the council.
So if developers were to get on that board, then you could see exactly what Greg is talking about.
But then you'd have they would have to rewrite because it's so restrictive as far as historical buildings. To get on the board and then tear it apart, yes, it's possible. It could be done the way it is currently as well. It's definitely a possibility, and I guess more so maybe if it's a regulatory agency rather than just the historical board. But for me, this it would kind of be the opposite effect. It would be, taking people and property that was not in historical district, encapsulating them in the historical district, and then taxing and fining those people basically out of existence. And then you could kill downtown, and then the developers could come in later. But that would be more of a long-term problem.
And Anthony's familiar. He lives here, so he knows the area. So this is interesting. Yeah, Anthony?
Yeah. We had a furniture store downtown. We were one block outside the historic district. And the city council kept thinking we were in the historic district. So every time we went to go put a sign up or something like that, they were like, no, you need a special historic society permit, and it's going to take months to get. And it's like, we're not in the district, dude. Leave us alone.
Yeah. And this is the problem. The historic districts do well if they preserve things like the Imogene. And it was a wonderful little theater built in 1912. I mean, it should be a national historic landmark. I'm surprised the UN hasn't moved in and declared it a heritage site or something like that. But that's the thing that needs to be preserved. But it needs to be living. We need to have acts there. I saw B.J. Thomas there. I saw Leanne Womack there. I saw the Milton High School Jazz Band, which is fabulous. Our local high school jazz band there. So it needs to be a living thing, but it needs to be preserved. That's what historical societies are supposed to do. What they're not supposed to do is regulate, micromanage. Like, your sign has to look, ye old furniture store, kind of thing. That's when they go crazy. And people get a little carried away with their own power. So you got to draw those lines where they're doing the right thing, but not too much of the right thing as far as they're concerned. Make sense?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay. All right. Yeah, and Anthony, since you're here, and I'm really glad to have you still here. This is great because ungodly hour you are right now. Feel free to just jump in the conversation. You don't need for me to call on you because I really appreciate your point of view. David, what else we got? Hospital, vaccine mandates. There's a federal judge in Georgia, one of the circuits, I forgot which one, that just ruled all federal contractors. There's no mandates for federal contractors. There's now no mandate for healthcare workers. And I think, the third one is there's no mandate for companies over 100 people. So the judges, and I think these are Trump judges, which is, people don't realize how important it is, to appoint, judges that actually believe in the Constitution. But I think these are Trump judges that actually turned away all these Brandon mandates and were in pretty good shape. But has that affected the hospital, especially the healthcare? I think the healthcare workers, too, they can't be required either.
Yeah, and honestly, it's had a weird effect. So when the Medicaid and Medicare put out their mandates, right, 100% of the hospital staff, anybody that was receiving their funding had to be vaccinated. So
which is everybody.
So all the hospitals put out their vaccine mandates. Well, then in the state of Florida, we had the Governor DeSantis called a special session. They passed HB1B, which outlawed that, implemented fines, et cetera. So when that passed in Florida, everybody that I know got an email from their HR department, ones that had been released from employment, ones that were currently still employed, and outlined the procedure. Here's all the exemption forms. You have to use our forms. It has to be worded in this manner. You have to accept X, Y, and Z. So all of them jumped through all the hoops, and then the federal court did put the stay on Biden's mandate. Well, then they sent out an email that said, okay, look, so all of this is on hold, waiting for the federal court. None of the exemptions are valid. We're not accepting anything. We're just stopping everything, putting it right back the way it was. you guys still have to test every week, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was really disheartening for a lot of them. And one, even our delegates don't understand the law. So they keep using the supremacy clause incorrectly, stating that federal law supersedes state law.
No,
well, even if you believed that, the supremacy clause says the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, not the federal law. But Biden's unilateral executive order passed down through Medicare is not a law. It doesn't hold the same weight as a law. Florida, we did it right. DeSantis called a special session. All of our legislators got together. They passed a law. He signed it. It is a law, not a mandate, not an executive order. So how these hospitals, and I understand you're talking billions, hundreds of billions of dollars if you add up the entire country, but individual hospitals are losing hundreds of millions of dollars over this. They don't care how much the people complain about it. They don't care what the law is. All they know is they're not going to be able to operate without this money. And that's pretty much where we're at.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're now saying it's company policy to do what was a mandate before. So there's money in it. And this is one of the things we need to trace. I was just looking at the supremacy clause as we're talking here. Article 6, paragraph 2 of the Constitution. Supremacy clauses, it establishes in the federal – I think this is wrong. Let me go find it here. Article 6, paragraph 2. Let me get the Constitution version, not the law screwed up definition. Article 6, section 2. The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state or to the contrary, notwithstanding. Okay. Yeah, so the Constitution and laws. So what it basically says is where the Constitution delegates power to the federal government, it's supreme. Where it's not delegated, because also the 10th Amendment says those things not specifically delegated to the federal government are delegated to the states and the people. So the federal government is supreme in the areas that they're delegated to regulate or make laws over. That's the supremacy clause.
And
it makes
only
sense.
Only in those areas.
Exactly. And that's the part that people don't understand, because you get people all the time, well, you know, federal trumps state, state trumps county, county trumps city. No, we're not a national government. We don't have a top-down hierarchy. Federalism, the definition of federalism, is that the federal government has certain responsibilities, and those are separate from the states, which have certain responsibilities, and then the counties and the cities and the various subdivisions thereof. Each has their own specific jurisdiction where they are supreme. You know, cities are supreme in city law where they have jurisdiction. You know, and people don't understand that. And this is one of the biggest problems, is people get bluffed all the time because they don't know their rights, and they go by their assumptions. You know, another assumption, the Supreme Court can make law, like Roe v. Wade, which is just up in the recent Supreme Court decision. You know, that's not a law. It's not a policy. It's moot, because the Supreme Court doesn't do that. And an executive order, people think that's a law. That's not a law either. Every executive order has to come under the authority of a duly passed law by a legislature. And this is when David said that Florida did it right. They actually called a special session. They passed some laws. Now, I've got some disagreements with the laws. I think the two that we wrote here on parental rights and putting public health under the Constitution, clearly, I think we're better than the laws coming out of the state. But the state did, you know, some of the parts of it were good, especially private information and not outing people just for, you know, their vaccine status and stuff. So they did some good things, but they did some bad things too. They kept the treatment by any means necessary clause in, and that has to be changed. But they're not supreme. The federal government is not supreme, and most people don't know that. They think it is. And the federal government's quite happy that people think it is. And that's the problem. Anthony, you were sort of starting on this here. Let me get your take on it. Well, New Zealand, you're a national system. Your federal government is supreme, right?
That's correct. Yes. Yes. That's exactly how it is. So the federal government handled – well, it's not called the federal government. It's just the government.
That's even worse.
And then each local MPs write their own ordinances.
Mm-hmm. So what about the city of Auckland? Are they under the federal government? Does the federal government regulate the city of Auckland?
Yes. We just experienced it with a 14-week lockdown.
Yeah, well, like I say, you're living under a dictatorship, dude. Go ahead.
Well, we're under such a ridiculous situation now where under our old rules, so my wife started a sports league because, of course, we're entrepreneurs, right? So
right.
She started a sports league here, and we had 40-some-odd people playing sport legally under the old rules. Then they changed the rules with this new vaccine passport, and we had to literally tell 7 people that, I'm sorry, we either have to shut down the league or you 7 can't play. As a business decision, we had no other choice.
Yeah, see, this is the problem. Austria and Germany are experiencing this, and Germany doesn't have a great record when it comes to restricting their people. They're the last people that should be doing this, but this whole idea of a vaccine passport, and I have a vaccine timeline. Europe was talking about this, back in, I think, 2018. So they already knew this was coming. And so this is why we call this the plandemic, as Dr. Judy Mikovits would say. So the whole idea of vaccine passports, of tracking people, of creating a two-class society, those that are chemically injured and those that are not, is horrific to me. It's a preventable medical holocaust that turned out horribly. And I know we disagree with this, and that's okay. I'm praying that it's not as bad as I hear it might be. But on the other hand, COVID was nowhere near as bad as we were told it was too. So, it's one of these things we have to wait and see. But the idea that a government can tell you have to take any drug into your body is in the United States is a complete violation of your Fourth Amendment right to be secure in your person. That's your body. Government has no right to do that. So every mandate is unconstitutional on that basis alone. But you guys are under a dictatorship where you're a democracy, so majority rules, and there are no established rights. I mean, do you have a Bill of Rights? Do you have anything even comparable? Do you have any recourse?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've never looked that up. Maybe that'll be a good topic of discussion for our next encounter.
Yeah. Well, I'll write that down somewhere. New Zealand Bill of Rights. Dave, what do you think? Isn't it an interesting comparison of our nations here?
There's no way. I'd be in prison already if I lived in a situation like that. I've had the same similar situation where my client, we contract with a larger company, and we run, 30 trucks. We're a medium-sized business, and they try the same thing. And they tried it a little bit different way, can we get a copy of who you guys, which one of your technicians are vaccinated and which one of them aren't?
Who's asking?
We don't have any mandate. We don't have anything like that. But it's like, no. One, I don't have a right to ask. So if I don't have a right to ask, I certainly can't tell you. And second, if you just while we're on the subject, you mandate it, I'll pull every truck I've got. So we've all got to be willing to go that far.
Yeah. I'm just fortunate that, my part-time gig has not required, because I would quit. I mean, they know that too. But that hasn't come to that, which is good. But as far as I really feel for the people, because we would do a lot of work with medical people that have been facing these mandates. And I said, keep your jobs. Don't submit to the vaccine. This is going to work itself out. And what's happening is what I was hoping would happen, that enough Trump judges would realize the unconstitutionality of all this and put a slap down to Brandon's mandates. But the problem is that, here it really comes back to the fundamental issue. You've got an illegal operation out of the White House. You've got an illegal government in office. You've got geldings on the other side that refuse to do anything about it. So we have a coup. And so you can't expect legal mandates to come out of an illegal government. It just doesn't happen. There's no incentive for them to. The fact that they were allowed to exist
Follow
as an
money.
Illegal government, changes everything. Was that Anthony?
Follow the money. Why would they do anything about it? They're getting paid millions to not do anything about it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Do you have any resources, Anthony. I'm trying to find out where the money comes from. I'm trying to establish the connection between, you know, big pharma, big government pharma, the hospitals. I don't know if you did any work with hospital administration in your business studies, but I know from what we've been told that the CDC is paying Medicare folks, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Systems Funding is paying gobs. They give 20% extra for remdesivir, which causes kidney failure and puts you on a ventilator and causes death. You've got a whole bunch of money. Is that something that you could help us look up? Because I'm still trying to get some actual, I'm trying to find documentation of exactly how much money is going to these hospitals to make it, you know, what we've created here is a situation where it's more valuable to give treatments that are known, you know, fatal than it is to actually save people. Because there's more money in death, unfortunately,
yeah,
in
like chemotherapy.
Than there is in life. That's another good one. Yeah. Yeah. But if you want to do any medical, if you have any medical research for us to help us out here, we've got medical groups. We've got health professionals here too, but
blows my mind is why administer chemo? Why administer chemo? It has less of a success rate than prayer and it costs $10,000 a treatment. So yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Chemo's that's a whole other. Well, actually you should call in if you get a chance to, Chancey Terry, who's our wine, weed, and wellness person, and has all kinds of, you know, every alternative you can think of to traditional death medicine. And I'm not a big fan of it. Like I say, I had open heart surgery, and the surgery went fine, but it's the stuff after it that almost, killed me. That's another story. So, David, let's get back to we've sort of a little off track here, but if you have any evidence, any of your folks in the medical folks that can trace where this extra money is coming from, I know there's a huge pipeline of money. I think people can get up to $100,000. Hospitals can if they do all the stuff that the CDC wants, and the CDC gets the kickbacks, and big pharma gets the kickbacks, and it's all based on taxpayer money. So these free vaccines, you know, are paid for by us, and the grants are paid for by us, and the research is paid for by us, and the production is paid for by us, and everybody else profits from
you
all the money paid for
some
by
of that
us.
Money.
Go ahead. Anthony?
You can find some of that money in some of the omnibus bills. So if you look at even the state or federal omnibus bills, there's always the funding breakdowns are listed in there so you can see where the money is going. And then also, of course, campaign finance. So you can look up any individual person's campaign contributors and see who they are. And you'll start seeing huge money pumping in from Pfizer and from Moderna and everybody else, and that's why they just sit by and twiddle their thumbs, because that's what's going to get them reelected.
Yeah. This is why Congress will never pass the bill that we have putting full product liability back on the vaccine manufacturers. This is why it has to be done through citizen legislation. David, do you have a comment?
I've found each one of our delegates in Tallahassee has filed a bill. I think the Doug Broxson was a $5.4 million disproportionate funding to Sacred Heart, and then Andrade did a $4.9 million, I believe it was, for Baptist. But each one of the delegates has all submitted a multi-million-dollar funding for each one of the hospitals here locally, and that happened all the way across the state. So that's not all the funding that they're getting, but that's just what you can find under the bills that were introduced by our three local reps.
So why would private hospitals need public funding? What's going on?
Exactly.
Where's the money going? Yeah. Well.
Exactly. Why are they getting public funding as well as Medicare or Medicaid funding? And then that's not even the COVID relief. That has nothing to do with the COVID relief funding or how much they were getting per positive COVID case and per COVID death. All of that is federal, and I've been unable to crack that nut. So, the money that's floating around is unbelievable.
Well, no, I mean, like I say, it makes death more profitable than life, and we know that simply because the simple treatments, the cheap treatments, you know, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D3, C, and zinc, are demonized and banned. I mean, Dr. Fascist actually banned, you know, these treatments, you know, and the hospitals can't do it. But they make so much money for remdesivir, they're actually willing to defy court orders to keep people on a known kidney failure drug, remdesivir, which leads, I think it's pulmonary edema, which fills your lungs with fluid, which puts you on a ventilator. And those things have anywhere from a 97 to 99% death rate once you're on a ventilator. You know, this is just a horrendous, but there's so much money in it. There's no cost for losing people. There's no medical malpractice. The other side, the side of law that's supposed to protect people is completely absent. I don't know where medical malpractice went, but you would think that some decent medical malpractice lawyers would be taking all these hospitals to court, you know, mandate or no mandate. They're violating every health code imaginable, you know, by forcing people to take these treatments that they know don't work. And they know they don't work because of the track record. Yeah, right. You have anything close to that in New Zealand? Or go ahead, David.
Even the testing, is something as minute as the testing option, the swabs that they use have ethylene oxide. Ethylene oxide is a known carcinogen. And if you, with my wife specifically, we offered to submit to testing, but use our own swabs, ones that, you know, contained only cotton, not ethylene oxide, refused to do it. So, you know, ethylene oxide in the minute amount that's on the end of that swab under normal medical condition, because it's not a new thing. It's not like they just put that on there for COVID. It's been there for decades. But, you know, if you get tested for strep three times in your entire life, it's not enough to harm your body. But when you're testing three times a week or twice a week or every week, that is a lot of a known carcinogen that you are intentionally forcing in somebody's body.
Especially when they put those swabs up next to your brain. I don't know what the hell is going on with this testing. Were they told, you know, is this some new medical standard I've never heard of, that you can't swab, you know, a place where it doesn't hurt you? They have to push these swabs in almost as far as they can go. I mean, I took a look at that. So I'm never getting a swab up my nose. I don't want some idiot.
Why are they still swabbing in the U.S.?
Ah, okay. Go ahead. What's going on, Anthony?
We haven't been swabbing here in over a year. We do saliva tests.
Yep.
Oh, that's
interesting. We spit in a spoon, and the spoon goes in a cup, and the cup gets tested.
Yeah. As of December 2020, the CDC themselves said that the swab and the PCR test were ineffective and should no longer be used, and we're still swabbing.
And still doing the PCR test. Yeah, PCR test is useless. It was never designed to test for COVID anyway. It's not a virus test. I mean, they put certain criteria for certain things they look for. But who was it talked to us yesterday that they put a PCR test, they ran cold water over it, and it tested positive for COVID? I don't know if you heard that. That was from yesterday.
Yeah, here's the one that I heard was the I don't know how reliable this is, but Zimbabwe banned the swabs before they ever reached their country because they said, I think something's up with this. And they tested a goat and a papaya, and both of them tested positive for COVID.
I have heard that. I have heard that. And here's the thing with the African countries that's so interesting is that they have ridiculously low, well, I mean, good levels. I mean, you know, ridiculously low levels of COVID. And I, you know, most of us look to their use of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin as malaria preventives, and which also prevent COVID. And so, you know, and they're trying to demonize these countries and trying to vax them up. And Pfizer, of course, is in there. Pfizer's got, you know, more money than God almost at this point. And it's crazy. They have so much money, and they're using so much influence. They're arm twisting all over the world. And that's why you have Pfizer and New Zealand. I'm sure they outbid all the other companies so they get the contract. There's something to look into. Is there any corruption that that any of your journalists, your investigative reporters have uncovered between Pfizer and the New Zealand government? Who's getting paid off there?
We don't have investigative journalists here.
What?
All the media are talking pieces for the government, basically.
Oh, my God. Well, you're not selling to New Zealand, dude.
But,
I'm here to tell you. I mean, it's a great place to visit, but, you know, I would never live there just based on what I've heard this morning.
Well, okay. Politic aside, it is best place I've ever lived, by far.
Okay. Tell me
so,
why. I'm curious.
You know, cost of living, affordability, great stuff there is to do around, and just the general politeness and courtesy of people.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about, are you going to get scammed tomorrow? You don't have to worry about, is somebody going to come open your car door to see if they can find something inside? It does not happen.
Interesting. Yeah, well, like I say, it's a New Zealand population, you know, it's an entirely different world down there. You know, it's been sort of insulated, isolated, and you don't have a lot of the problems that we have here. I think one of the reasons you don't have as many problems, you don't have as many illegal aliens, first of all. You don't have the groups all battling each other in society, and you don't have the crime problem where you don't have the victim mentality of a Democrat Party trying to, you know, reward the criminals and, you know, go after the honest people. I got another call here. I want to bring Josie in the conversation. Josie is originally from Nicaragua, grew up under communism. And so I'm sure we'll have something to add. Josie, we got a treat here. You're on with Anthony from New Zealand. We've got, she's from here, but living in New Zealand now. We've got David Jones from Santa Rosa Volunteers. Josie, what would you like to add to our discussion this morning?
Hey, good morning. About the remdesivir that is killing so many innocent people in the hospitals for getting $2,300. One of the nurses was telling me a few days ago that the price went up. She said, oh, no, they're not getting $2,300. They're getting more. But she wasn't sure how much. I think she said $4,000, but she wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think
for each dosage that they pump in each body's innocent people, you know. My friend, he's not doing well at all at the hospital next to me. They started with the remdesivir, and I told the wife, no resin, no remdesivir, no ventilator. And she didn't, I guess they made the guy sign it, thought he was signing for meds because, you know, he's in another world, poor guy, sick.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
They told him, would you like to continue your meds? And he didn't know what meds. And they were giving him the remdesivir for a few days, like 3 or 4 days, and they got him off. And this guy was doing very well. He was reading all the cards that we sent to him so he can be busy and all that. And he had a panic attack, and because of the panic attack, they put him in the ventilator and blew up one of his lungs. From there, now his kidneys are shutting down completely. And I think now he might be like brain dead.
Oh my God!
So it's a mess. It's a mess.
Yeah,
his face is swollen now. Like he's probably gonna die soon.
Oh, yeah. So sorry. We've turned in this country from a healthcare system that actually helps people, you know, into one that's part of the big government pharma bureaucracy pushing drugs that they know are deadly. Remdesivir has a terrible record. They had to stop the trials.
It is
because half the people died on trial. You know, the vaccine, the original SARS vaccine, they had to get rid of because all the animals died. You know, as soon as they got out in the fresh air and they were exposed to other viruses, they dropped dead.
And I was sharing with one of the nurses about it yesterday that works there, that I know her very well. And
right.
She said, oh, they're not going to be sued. West Florida will never be sued. I don't know what she meant about that, but I've been sending messages to his wife and his son to get a legal advice right away. And yesterday they had a doctor on a conference call they hire a new doctor, but I don't think this doctor can do much now because the guy's about to die. There's not much he can do, he told him. And the doctor from West Florida Hospital, he was rude and nasty to the family because they hire another doctor. And these people are not listening to me. They should have got legal advice a long time ago. And I'm very disappointed that they're not taking action because they murdered this guy. I mean, he's not dead yet, but he will be probably. So it
is. And this,
I've
heard so many of these stories. This is happening all over the country right now. David, what's going on at Santa Rosa Hospital?
They refused to give him ivermectin. They didn't want to give him ivermectin. So that would cure the guy immediately. Because when you have a panic attack, just put him to sleep for a little while, you know. Don't put him under no ventilator. There was nothing wrong with him. His COVID was gone. His vitals were good. Breathing was good. Everything was good. We thought he was going to get out any day.
Why was he in the hospital?
They said, well, make sure you send him tons of cards so his mind can keep busy and all that. They didn't allow no family members to come and visit him at all. It was just, they want these people to be lonely and die alone. And this is not America. This is worse than what I grew up with, communists. This is evil, evil what this government is doing to this country. And we need to stop it. And we need to say, no, this is my loved one. I'm going in. I don't care. And you're fired that doctor. And these people, I don't know, I think they felt paralyzed. So it's very sad. So how is New Zealand?
Josie, to hear you say that is...
Are we people wearing masks everywhere in New Zealand?
Yes. Yeah, everybody wears masks pretty much. It's a requirement. You have to.
But they don't work.
But the masks don't do nothing.
They don't do anything.
Masks don't do nothing.
No, they don't. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it, but they want to get on with their lives, so they just put it on and go about their business.
But you can't get – this is the myth, though. This is great. We're having a cross-global conversation. You can't get on with your life. As long as you comply. The only way to get on with your life is to stop complying and stop the government from having this kind of power. That's the only way. That's why we're getting a life back. You know who's getting the life back? Are the people that did not take the vaccine, that are resisting, that are willing to lose their job. They are causing us to get our life back. All of us that are resisting all over the place. Everybody that's taking action against, these horrible policies, and I want to start a big campaign. I got to talk to David about this, probably Josie too, to defund Brandon. So that the next time the government runs out of money in February, I'm going to be talking to CPAC about this. I'm hoping they'll make it the theme of the Conservative Political Action Conference we're all going to in February. Mm-hmm. Is the resistance is what's getting our normal life back. Yelling at the stadiums, let's go Brandon. Humiliating these people. That's what gets your life back. The resistance. And we did a show from conformity to resistance a couple of months ago. We were right on. We called it perfectly exactly when the turning point was. Jesse, go ahead.
And can I make an example? The poor Cuban people came out by thousands in the street resisting police and all that. And guess what? The reason they did it is they thought maybe America or somebody will come and help them and all that. And nobody came to the rescue. And over 500 are missing in Cuba. They probably hung them, executed them already. They're gone, missing.
Yeah, that would have been you, me, and Dave. If Cuba, if the FBI, KGB under Commissar Garland has their way, the three of us, we'd be the first that'd be taken off, the streets immediately. So I understand, the brave folks in Cuba that actually stand up to these dictatorships, knowing they're risking their lives. We're not risking our lives yet, but the folks that walked into the Capitol. And you were there at the Capitol January 6th, Josie, so
I was.
That, we have political prisoners. We don't even have show trials at this point. We have star chambers. We have everything that every totalitarian dictatorship has, just to a lesser degree. We don't have the gulags yet, but we do have political prisoners in D.C. We have mandates that are completely unconstitutional. We have an illegal government, like most of the dictatorships come to power illegally. Although it's interesting, Hitler was actually elected. I don't know if it was vote fraud, but the fact that he was elected, Lenin seized power, so there are different ways of coming to power. Mao seized power. Hitler was elected. It's fascinating. I think Mussolini was elected also.
Mm-hmm.
Biden was not. Go ahead.
And since you were saying that this government is illegal, and we know 100% it's illegal. They're fraud, crook, criminals, all of them. They all should be in Gitmo. I want to help to put them in there. I can hardly wait. So everything is illegal that they're doing, everything. So that means that mandates are illegal. And the FDA has approved a vaccine that is not even in the country. It's coming in 2023, that vaccine that FDA approved. They have deceived and lied to the world and to the American people. They're criminals.
Well, are they still making the vaccine? Listen to me. The GMO, RNA shot, are they still making it under the emergency authorization? Because they're certainly not making the stuff that's been approved. Are they still making the other stuff?
It's not here.
Or they have so much from the warp speed.
What they're giving to people is... Wait, you just asked me. What they're giving to people is prior vaccines that they're giving everybody that they want to use as animals, like guinea pigs. That's what they're doing. But the real vaccine that the FDA has approved is not in the country yet until 2023. It's not here.
I understand. They haven't made it. But, what I was getting at was this insanity. I mean, and it's for a variant that died out, back in 2020. Dave, I don't neglect you here in the conversation. Santa Rosa Hospital, what is their current policy? Are they doing the remdesivir? Are they still mandating, even though there is no mandate, GMO shots for their health workers? What's going on there? And how's their track record on saving people, or is it not so good?
No, so they're doing the remdesivir. They're pumping everybody full of that nonsense. They have the get the shot or test every other week policy. They went back to that. And they're denying people's religious exemptions. So nothing really has changed there. They are allowing visitors, if your loved one's coming to die, but that whole thing, which the only reason I believe that they are is because very early on in COVID, when they did stop all visitation, there was a gentleman whose wife was in the hospital dying, completely unrelated to COVID, and they wouldn't let him in. So he's desperate. He goes to his truck and gets a shotgun and proceeds to charge the hospital. Well, security did their job. The police department got there before he even made it to the door, and he was arrested. But look, I don't blame that man. If my wife, and I mean, he's an older gentleman, if, you know, the woman that I had spent the last 6 years of my life was in there dying, you guys might want to get out of my way. But the hospital created that situation, and I had a long conversation with the hospital at that time because my wife was in that building at that point. So for me, violence wouldn't solve that problem, but if you have a loved one that's in a hospital dying and they won't let you see them, there needs to be 200 or 500 or 1,000 people show up with you. They can't arrest everybody. They can't throw everybody out. And it's the same thing with the mask mandates back early on in COVID when they said, oh, well, you can't come in here if you don't have a mask on. Well, I'd call, you know, 20, 30, 50 people, and we'd all go in there, and they'd just sit there until we left. There's nothing that they could do. We have to do the same thing. We have to come together, and, you know, if they say, no, you can't come in here, your loved one's dying, you go back to the car, you make some phone calls. Half hour later, you walk in with a mob of people, and by the time they get all of that figured out, situation will be over with anyway.
No, I firmly believe in resistance. In fact, put me on the phone list, you know, for people to call so that because I have more time now, I can do some more stuff like that. Anthony, did you have a comment?
No. Other than it was nice talking with everybody, and I am going to bed.
Well, it makes sense. What is it, 3:30 in the morning there or something? 3:30.
Yeah. I did want to applaud Josie real quick and just kind of emphasize to your listeners that, Josie, you spoke up and you said something that, you know, for somebody who grew up under communism to say that what's happening in America right now, what the government is doing is absolutely evil, people need to listen to that because that's the voice of experience talking.
She's on every Tuesday.
Amen.
You can listen and you can share with your New Zealand friends. Yeah. Go ahead, Josie.
Thank you. Yeah, the American people don't know how good they had it for so many years. And for them to continue complying with this criminal, it's not good because communism is here already. And if we don't stop it, it'll be too late. Too late. When the toilet paper disappeared in America, I was looking out my window in tears. I said, no, not again. I'm not going through this again. I just lost a big account from one of the local hospitals because I was talking about vaccine with one of the new radical left workers that came from up north, and she went and told on me. And you know what? The head honcho called me from the hospital, and I told her off in a nice way, professionally. And I said, I lived through communists. I will never stop talking, never. I will never lose my freedom of speech that I earned when I came to this country. And you don't know and don't have a clue, and they're coming after you next. She didn't like that at all. But I did tell her that.
No, it's good.
So,
yeah,
anyway,
you're the voice of experience. People need to listen to you. They need to listen to you.
God bless. Yes.
Well, actually, they do. She's on every Tuesday giving the Latino Report. So feel free to share our Tuesday shows with Josie and every other show.
7:30.
Yeah, that's central. Yeah, so it's an hour and a half into the show if you're on podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, guys, have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Anthony.
Good
you
night.
Take care. We'll get
good
you out
drinking
back in another
America.
Month or so.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Take care. So Anthony Williams, again, just sure. to let folks know who are just joining us, was calling us from New Zealand. And if it sounded like he's around the corner, you know, local, this is the wonders of modern technology is we're able to get somebody. We have a Skype line here, which is open all the time. Anybody wants to call us by Skype, mm-hmm. you know, feel free anywhere in the world. Like I said, we just had New Zealand. It's 3:30 in the morning there. Thursday morning. So he's already into Thursday. So we just heard from the future.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of interesting. But, and next time things are a little rushed this time, but I'm going to promote it a little bit next time when he comes on. But Anthony's fascinating. Just any follow-up comments, and I'll get back to David, and we'll see what's
going
on.
Yeah, some of my husband's family member in Chicago, Orlando, different areas,
mm-hmm.
Many of them already vaccinated. They're going through a lot with this COVID, and it's a mess. A lot of the family members are vaccinated, including all my sisters in Miami. And my sister, 68 years old, now has menstrual, I think, every week or every other week, which is not normal. She's been with menopause since 52, 53, and now at 68, 69 years old, she has her menstrual. It's crazy. This is crazy. I told them not to do it. But there's not much you can do. You can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make it drink it.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that's where we are with our family
assumptions.
Members.
Assumptions are stronger than mm-hmm. truth. Emotions are stronger than truth. What they feel, they think
yeah.
is real, you know, as opposed to the fact.
Yeah.
David,
it's
you know,
fear.
Greg,
it's
yeah.
fear.
Oh, yeah.
Fear. Because I was talking to a young lady, Filipino, yesterday. They just moved here from California.
Uh-huh.
And she's a young girl, beautiful girl. She must be like 22, just finished college and all that, and going into
her.
The medical RN program,
right.
Work, I should say. Yeah. And she said she was vaccinated, and she said, I have to do it in order to see my parents. I said, what do you mean? Are they in a nursing home? You look so young. She said, no, they're doctors, both of my parents, and they insisted I cannot visit them unless I was vaccinated, and they both got vaccinated. And I started telling her all this stuff. She was there for 45 minutes listening to me. And I'm sending her a lot of videos that she didn't have a clue. And because they're hooked with CNN and MSNBC and all those radical fake channels that they're not telling the truth. I said, no, sweetie. I said, you need to start detoxing now with ivermectin. You know, you have to get help. And she did not know about all this stuff. So a lot of,
of course
including
not. She's a nursing
one
student.
Of the doctors.
Think about that for a second.
Student, include,
yeah.
Yeah,
well,
it's a shame. It's a shame.
Well, I got a question for both of you. It's a huge shame, but, it, you know, coming from California, a lockdown state, you know, we've got two different countries here, and we reported on that yesterday, the fact that there are such splits between the free states and the communist states. It's almost like, what was that movie, the Russian invasion movie, Red Dawn. It's like Red Dawn's happened.
Red Dawn.
They didn't come in with tanks. They came in with doctors. You know, so David,
yeah.
And David and Jose, I'm going to go David first, but Anthony's been really interesting. In New Zealand, they know the masks don't work. Everybody knows the masks don't work. They wear them anyway. That to me is irrational. You know, if they know they don't work, why doesn't one person, you know, stand up and say, these don't work? You know, and if enough people start, resistance always works. Compliance never works. Compliance gets you to Holocaust and gas chambers, ultimately. You know, compliance leads you to death because there's never enough. These people are like narcissists. There's never I got experience with narcissists, folks, having grown up in a family of them. But, you know, empty black holes of eternal selfishness is how I describe narcissists. Government people are the same way with power. They are empty black holes of eternal power acquisition. There's no limit to how much power they will take if you let them. And the only way to control these people is to take away their power. And you can do that by vote. You can do that by protest. You can do that by... my way is going to be we're going to actually rewrite the laws that take away their power and give them no justification for what they want to do. And at that point, they'd be actually, you know, criminals as opposed to using the laws to be criminals. And so it's going to be an interesting change. But David and Josie, that comment just staggered me. They know it's not – they know they don't work, but they do it anyway. That's the saddest thing I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, and you see it here in the U.S. I've heard – pretty much every person that wears a mask will tell you the same thing. It's either, yeah, I know it doesn't work, but it's easier just to not fight with people about it. or if it just helps a little bit, then I'm doing something good. Deep down, you know the masks are useless. We've all known the masks are useless since day one. You need a higher level of respiratory protection to sand an automobile, do paint and body work, more or less protect you from the supposedly the deadliest virus in history. So it's irrational. It's always been irrational. But the reason they continue to force the mask is because it's a physical representation of that fear. Without that constant reminder on your face, or you seeing it on everybody else's face, even for those of us that refuse to wear it, when you walk out in public and you see that mask, it is a constant reminder of that fear. And that's, without breaking that cycle, we'll never get out of this.
Now, I don't get people asking me. Go ahead, Jesse. Yeah, I'll say my comment.
I believe now it's like a fashion for a lot of young kids that I see, because I noticed a lot of the kids are buying these fancy masks that they have a lot of little holes. They're not protecting them. It's like a fashion show. They have all these little glitters, all the little beads and things, and they come in all this fancy stuff. And I say, hey, you're welcome to take that mask off. And he's like, oh, no, it's for my protection. I said, okay. But, you know, I let them know when they come in the door that we don't require a mask. And then I have people giving me bad review. You're in the medical field helping all these medical people coming in. How come you don't have a sign that says require a mask? And I have the opposite. We don't require a mask on my door.
Yeah.
But I think people are just a bunch of little sheep that they're just following alone. They're not standing for the right. And many of them, like David was saying, they know the masks don't work. They know. They know. They know exactly. But it's just, this is Hitler's time we're living through. Fear.
So this is a really important point. And you don't have to set up gulags or mass firing squads or, you know, bury people in huge ditches. I mean, dictatorships do that. That's what ultimately, you know, this is where this all leads. But to control the population, it's actually not that hard. And Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic vaccine drug pusher, proved it by all the compliance, the willing participation of the Democrat governors, and even our own Ron DeSantis, Republican governors, initially were closing beaches and closing parks and doing all kinds of things. I was like, you idiots. I'd already known. We broadcasted it. You know, this is why I wish we had a million listeners, because we'd already broadcasted there was no pandemic. We'd already broadcasted the cures are out there. I had articles. In fact, I have a bunch of articles from early in COVID, you know, February, March, April of 2020, saying that there's no pandemic. We've got the cures. There's no reason for any of this nonsense. And so they're out there. Of course, they've probably been scrubbed from the internet now. But, I saved a few. And, of course, I saved our show. Our show, the original podcast, is still there. You can listen to it. You can listen to my report from Bill Gertz, you know, from the Washington Times, talking about the Wuhan lab in February of 2020, long before anybody else was talking about it. His stories have been taken off the Washington Times. And they're probably back now because it's fashionable to talk about Wuhan. But it's not that tough to create a dictatorship when you have so many people willing to give up their freedom so easily. That's what we're really facing. We have to drag these idiots along with us if we're ever going to have a free life. That's the problem. But the founders knew it. They knew they had to drag the population of slugs out there. We know it too. We have to drag, you know, the 20% of us that believe in freedom have to drag the 60% of us, 60% of them who are, you know, beer drinking, football watching, don't care, with us, so that the 20% of the Marxists don't take them over and ruin it for us.
And you know, the other thing I wanted to mention,
go ahead.
It's odd how many doctors are coming from Kenya, Bangladesh, India, because I do their lab books, I do their names, and I ask where they're from, because I want to know. And all these doctors are replacing our good American doctors. And like, for example, at this hospital where my friend is, this doctor ignored the wishes of the wife, the cheating one, the remdesivir, and he just skipped it, and they asked the husband because he was in another world, and the wife was not there, and before you know it, he was under remdesivir. So
Was this a foreign doctor?
I'm not sure. I will find out because I was thinking about that last night, but haven't reached to her this morning. But I was talking to my husband. I said, maybe this is a plan to bring all these doctors from all over this country. And, you know, normally you have to have a certification here in America in order for you to be a doctor here. So I don't know what's happening because some of the doctors, they barely speak English.
Most doctors.
The thing is, though.
Go ahead, Jean.
As we know, it doesn't matter where you're from as a doctor. It's the hospitals that are pushing the remdesivir because they're getting money
from other
entities. So it doesn't matter. That's what's really sad is they need to quit paying hospitals money for putting people on remdesivir in the ventilator. And if they quit doing that and quit giving them extra money if they're diagnosed with COVID, if they quit doing that, I wonder how many COVID cases or how the COVID cases, one, would go and how many people would not be put on ventilators and how many people would live.
Yeah.
But we'll never know that.
But usually the doctor makes a decision. Okay, I want this med, that med, that med, on that, and whatever he prescribed, that's it. Because I believe he...
Yeah, but the doctors aren't the ones. It's the higher-ups that are pushing it now.
Well,
and the doctors are
just
the chief. They're not coming up with their own ideas. If they are, most of them quit. That's what's really
sad. Well, that's my question, and I want David on this too. Where are the doctors going who want to practice medicine and don't want to, you know, give out death? Where are they going? Anybody?
They may be starting up their own, seeing people in their own private practice and stuff.
That's what I'm wondering. I would. That's the first
thing
I'd do.
The thing is you have to find them. Sometimes that takes a little while, unfortunately.
Yeah. Dave, you know what they're doing? Where are the medical folks? Well, of course, now the situation is changing because they're actually getting these mandates are going away. But what kind of, if you're a doctor, and this was the point I was going to make earlier, is that a lot of these doctors from these foreign countries, they all come from government health, national health system programs. They're used to being told by the government what to do. We have a non-government, for the most part, still, hopefully. Well, I don't know if it is anymore. Is this a government takeover of healthcare that we haven't really noticed? Is the Medicare funding group, Center for Medicare Funding, CMS, Center for Medicaid Systems, the folks that are funding and telling everybody you have to go on remdesivir and you get all those big, or they're just giving so much money to put people on remdesivir and other, lethal treatments as opposed to the cheap ones. Is this a government takeover of the health system that we didn't even notice?
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's just their way of putting their policies and getting people to do what they want them to do.
Okay. Interesting. I think we've covered everything. David, any other issues that we should be talking about? Thanks for staying longer, too. This has been a fascinating show. Everybody's been staying longer. I haven't played anything from my stock of stuff. Yeah, go ahead, David.
That's pretty much all I've got for this week. We've got a few more meetings. Things are slowing down a little bit politically for the holidays. Everybody's kind of involved with that. But, they've got this thing on autopilot, which is a bad thing right now. So we're just trying to get what we can done through the holidays and push these people to wake up and do the right thing. But I haven't been successful in 2 years, so starting to –
Don't get discouraged. The fight's only beginning. And this is why I say you have to have fun with activism. We can talk about that. I want to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, which I haven't played yet. My new one, the Anti-Federalist number 7. You've got to enjoy the process. You've got to enjoy being an activist. This is tough stuff, and it's very discouraging. And the forces are against us. I'll be honest. We've got an illegal government. You've got illegal mandates, and you got a population that values tyranny over freedom. I mean, how do you fight that? Well, you have to enjoy the process. If you don't, you're going to drive yourself crazy. All right, David, thank you so much. If you want to stick around, feel free and listen to our Santa Rosa Volunteers for the tweak or, catch it on podcast and everybody else. Josie, stick around. Jean, obviously. David, you want to give your communication information before you go? Folks want to reach you?
Yeah. So our website is srv1776.com. Email srv1776@protonmail.com. and then Arise Patriots on Facebook, Gab, and Twitter. If you need anything or want to be involved, reach out to us. We'll get you activated.
Just remember, sitting around gets us nowhere, so do something. All right, thanks, David. And let me play this, and we'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. The more I read of the prophecy apparent in the anti-Federalist Papers, forecasting the end of liberty and the beginning of federal oppression should the Constitution be ratified, the more I'm convinced the anti-Federalists were right, and that a modification of the Articles of Confederation would have been the far better course for this nation over ratifying the Constitution. We might have avoided our Civil War, and we might have even avoided the Marxist coup that stole our federal government with the willing cooperation of both major political parties. Anti-Federalist Number 7 was written by Philanthropus, an anonymous citizen of Virginia, and published December 6, 1787. In his opening sentences, he talks about both his time in 1787 and our time in 2021. The time in which the Constitution or government of a nation undergoes any particular change is always interesting and critical. Enemies are vigilant, allies are in suspense, friends hesitating between hope and fear, and all men are in eager expectation to see what such a change may produce. But the state of our affairs at present is of such moment as even to arouse the dead. In his time, it was whether the Constitution would be ratified and what would happen to liberty. In our time, it's what has happened to overthrow constitutional government and will it be restored. Once again, in prophecy, Philanthropus describes his time and ours. The new Constitution in its present form is calculated to produce despotism, thraldom, and confusion, and if the United States do swallow it, they will find it a bolus that will create convulsions to their utmost extremities. Were they mine enemies, the worst imprecation I could devise would be, may they adopt it. Forecasting some of our most grievous problems arising during the Constitution in force today, he said this: the Congress is having power without control to borrow money on the credit of the United States. They're having power to appoint their own salaries, and they're being paid out of the Treasury of the United States, thereby, in some measure, rendering them independent of the individual states. They're being judges of the qualification and election of their own members, which by means they can get men to suit any purpose. Philanthropus then urges the continuation of the Articles of Confederation with these words: our present Constitution, with a few additional powers to Congress, seems better calculated to preserve the rights and defend the liberties of our citizens than the one proposed, without proper amendments. Let us therefore, for once, show our judgment and solidity by continuing it and prove the opinion to be erroneous, that levity and fickleness are not only the foibles of our tempers, but the reigning principles in these states. Regarding the men who would change to the new Constitution, he says, there are men amongst us of such dissatisfied tempers that, place them in heaven, they would find something to blame, and so restless and self-sufficient that they must be eternally reforming the state. But the misfortune is, they always leave affairs worse than they find them. A change of government is at all times dangerous, but at present may be fatal, without the utmost caution, just after emerging out of a tedious and expensive war. In conclusion, Philanthropist gives us a plea for caution and a warning of what might happen with the ratification of the Constitution. He was more right than he ever could have imagined. He says, "In the most limited governments, what wranglings, animosities, factions, partiality, and all other evils that tend to embroil a nation and weaken a state are constantly practiced by legislators. What then may we expect if the new Constitution be adopted as it now stands? The great will struggle for power, honor, and wealth. The poor become a prey to avarice, insolence, and oppression. And while some are studying to supplant their neighbors and others striving to keep their stations, one villain will wink at the oppression of another, the people will be fleeced, and the public business neglected. From despotism and tyranny, good Lord, deliver us." Maybe it's time to review the Articles of Confederation as a potential return form of government, as a way to break the insane power and control currently exercised by a federal government supposedly limited to certain delegated powers. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com, besmallbusiness. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
We've only got about just under 8 minutes left, so I'm going to go to play anything else here. So, I'm going to start an article. I just want to sort of chat with our folks here. Josie's still here. Jean's still here. And just so get some general impressions. This has been an incredible show.
I'm still here.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you're still here. So what do you think of the fact that we had a call from New Zealand? You know, it doesn't get much further away, you know, on the planet than New Zealand. Yeah. So we're branching out. So if you have some friends around Central South America, they want to call in, feel free to let them know. We got the Skype line. It's right on our broadcast page. So it's easy to find. Anybody can do that. But we're gonna keep branching out. Yeah. Go ahead, Jean. Yeah.
Whatever happened to the one from Israel?
Barry Shaw, I've invited him back. I think he got a little upset with the fact that we tried to make the Skype line work. I think he just got frustrated. So I don't know what happened with Barry. But, I'd like to get Barry back. He's welcome. I've told him to come on back on the show. So we'll see. Who knows? Maybe he's doing other things. Yeah. Jean?
I was just going to say, I always thought about maybe possibly moving to another country. But then, like, what he's going through there, it's like, really, you have no freedom. you know, get the shot or you can't do anything. No, that's not how I want to live.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's really fascinating to have Anthony on, because he's a guy that does believe in freedom. But, you know, and it comes down to the same question I always ask. If given the choice, if it was completely optional, would you do it? And the answer is no. He said, no, I wouldn't do it, you know, because it's not that much of a risk. So complying with something you know is wrong is wrong. You know, I don't know how else to say it, but, you know, that'd be a great bumper sticker. But if you comply with something you know is wrong, that's wrong. You're violating all your principles. And it's only going to lead to more demands for more compliance. You know, we did a show maybe 5-6 months ago. You know, you can't buy back your constitutional rights. You can't buy back your normal life by doing things that are not normal. It doesn't work that way. Jesse, you know that.
Yeah. And, you know, Greg, I was pouring honey. I was talking to you here. Many people, I have to bottle honey. Many people say, I'm going to another country. I don't like America and all that. And I say, you know what, sweetie? You'll be back within 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
Because there's no other place in the world like the United States of America. I've been to 25 countries, and I know. I told that to one of my best friends in Miami. She was back 4 months later, and she already sold everything. So I suggest do not move. Go over there and spend 3 weeks in another country and see how you like it before you make a decision of moving out of the United States. A lot of people move to Costa Rica. They think, oh, I'm going to have everything. But there's a lot of crime, and people don't tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
Most Americans that move there, they come back because they cannot handle it. Yeah. So this is the best country in the world. Stay here, put up with it for right now, or stand against all the crimes going on in this country.
Which is not to say we can't make our country better, because we can. That's the whole point of Action Radio.
Yeah.
But Action Radio would not exist in New Zealand, I'll tell you right now. You know, I mean, I want to bring it to them and see what we can do, but there's no way. You know, I probably have to have a government license but the corporate's just as bad. You know, you've got corporations enforcing mandates that the government's already abandoned when the judges told them to. So any all power corrupts. But you've got the best chance of freedom here. We've got the best chance of leading the world into a freer state here than we do anywhere else. And I've lived in Canada. I've lived in Australia. You know, I've toured all of Western Europe, literally all of Western Europe. Well, actually, I missed Spain and Portugal. And I guess Norway and Sweden, Norway and Finland, but I'll get there. Anyway, point being, I've been to a lot of countries too. But I want to see the Asian countries. I want to get to Central and South America more. And then, well, South America, definitely. And I'd love to see Africa, you know, so there's a lot of places I've yet to see. But it's one thing to visit a country under like a cruise or a sheltered condition. You think, oh, isn't it a wonderful country? Everybody's happy. Yeah, but to live there under the rules and laws and taxes and mandates and health stuff like that, that's a completely different situation. You know, I love England, but I wouldn't want to live there.
Vacations are fun. Vacations are fun to go to other countries, but that's about it. Vacations are fun. You cannot own your own gun and protect your own self in other countries like America.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's why they want to destroy our country, because I think we're the only ones in the world that we have freedom of speech with our Second Amendment, too. So they want to take it away because they don't want to have guns.
Yeah. Well, see, guns seem like a canary. Go ahead, Jean.
I was going to say, it's interesting, though, because even in our own country, you know, each state is so different. You look at California and what they're not allowed to do versus what you're allowed to do in Florida or Texas or South Dakota or whatever, or what they're trying to do in New York City. I like, it just shows everybody the importance of who we vote for.
Well, it's more than that because, you know, the Constitution, both the Second Amendment and through the 14th Amendment, you know, the Bill of Rights applies to state and local governments as well. So what's going on in California is illegal, and they should be arrested for it. You know, I mean, the sheriffs that are violating the Constitution should be kicked out of office. The judges that are not enforcing the Second Amendment as written should be removed from the judgeship. You know, we've got the laws, and we've got the means to do it. But the problem is, you know, it takes good people to make good government. And that's our biggest failing right now, is we have people that are more interested in power than justice. You know, they're more interested in acquiring things than they are in fixing things. You know, so we need to fix the people, and the only way to fix the people is to remove the people that aren't doing a good job, which would be anybody, you know, from Bill Clinton through Obama that still works for the government. Get rid of all of them. Keep the Trump people, and get rid of anybody that works in the illegal Brandon administration. You know, it's a people thing. You've got to get rid of the people and get better people in. Those three cases, you know, the three cases that got rid of the mandates, you know, in Georgia, I think Louisiana, the Fifth Circuit, and I forget where the other one is. I believe those are all Trump judges, Trump appointed judges. Well, that makes a difference. You know, so you can thank Trump for putting the judges in who actually believe in the Constitution, getting them through Congress. I mean, Mitch McConnell actually did a good job there getting Trump judges through. But we're seeing the results of that now, because if these were Biden judges, you know damn well those mandates would be enforced. And they're not. So thank Trump for that. Anyway, got 30 seconds left. Who wants it?
God bless
Josie,
you.
Jean.
Pray for this man in
West
Florida.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
People stay healthy. Just don't do anything in fear.
Yeah. Don't let the government tell you what to do. Remember, compliance equals tyranny. It's just that simple. If you want your freedom, you have to resist. So keep resisting. We'll do it again tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock Central Time, 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and in New Zealand, it's really, really early tomorrow morning. Thanks very much, everybody. Greg Fengles for Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, and our website, our brand new, wonderful, improved, writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.